Imagine my shock when I heard that there was going to be one at the local prom up the road. Charming.
Oh, no. Well, you know, I was just sort of shaking my head. I'm like, I said, oh, no, he popped up in Afghanistan. You know what I mean? It's just some sort of Bush redux, you know. I'm sorry. As soon as I heard that, I thought, now he's appearing in the various war zones. Great.
Well, and of course, that's a great big let's see if you've got the guts to do this Mitt Romney kind of thing.
Well, no, but Mitt Romney, he needs to shut the hell up. I mean, I couldn't believe that little quib about Carter. I'm like, you couldn't even stand in Carter's shoes, you asswipe. Mitt Romney, I mean, please give me a break. His foreign policy, the people are still stressing the Cold War, for Pete's sake. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's just a joke.
They are literally in a different century.
No. Yeah, exactly. And you know, he doesn't have any. He's a joke. I'm just sort of beyond the beyonds with Mitt Romney. It's like, don't talk about anybody. You ain't served shit. You actively use your cult to get out of service, right?
Didn't his mission trip to, you know, the heathens in France, didn't that keep him out of Vietnam?
Yeah, right. He didn't even have the balls to go to a third world country for his little mission. France, please. God.
Well, he was special assistant to the prophet or something over there.
No, listen, the more Mitt Romney. I mean, that dude is gonna get, I don't know. I suppose they keep showing these polls, which I don't believe, that he's somehow hanging in there. I mean, he has to be one of the most despicable candidates I've ever seen, ever. And I've been following politics, you know, actively since I was 13.
Yeah, for too long, right.
And it's just like, he's, wow. I'm lost for words for just how insipid and venal this guy is. He's awful.
Well, I love this idea that everybody would have ordered that kill shot on Bin Laden, when in fact Barack Obama's own cabinet was split on the issue. Did you happen to notice that? I mean, Joe Biden was saying, you know, Mr. President, I really wouldn't do this because we don't necessarily know that's him and we don't know that it's there, and this could be a real big mess.
Well, no, but I mean, the thing, but I mean, I'm sorry. I know we're supposed to be voting for Mr. Obama, but he loves his killing because now he's okayed it for them to drone out people even when the target is, quote, unknown.
Yeah.
I'm like, damn, you don't kill much? It's like blood. It's really a lot of bloodletting to me. I find it quite, you know, we've had this conversation about Obama. I'm like, I'm scared of that fool. Scared, okay?
Yeah, well, you know, and it sort of ties in with the whole great big plot to blow up a bridge in Cleveland that wasn't really.
Well, no, I couldn't even. That one was just like, oh, what? You know what I mean? And to me,
it falls into the same category as, hey, guys, we got some new basketball shoes here. A couple, you know, you want to go blow up the Sears Tower?
That's what I'm saying. I mean, you know, to sort of, you know, prey on the simpletons. You know what I mean? I like how they try to link it to Occupy, and it just was like, oh no, you know. And they're just giving anarchists a bad name. I mean, all the anarchists I've read about in history seem pretty damn smart. Not like these dumbasses. You understand what I'm saying?
Right, and that's the thing. They're not. I mean, let's take for instance. What was her name? Emma Goldman.
Well,
you know, she was an anarchist during the Russian Revolution, and she went over to check out what was going on there and said, "F these people." You know, she didn't want anything to do with the Bolsheviks either.
Yeah, well, and those two, and the Italians that got strung up here.
Sacco and Vanzetti.
Right. I mean, you know, there's a lot more. I mean, don't, you know, please, let's, I don't know. The whole thing is just, it just preys on everyone's lack of any historical perspective whatsoever.
Well, I get the creeping, crawling paranoids every time I see one of these, because these things are tailor-made. I mean, I remember, what was the big summit thingy in Canada where the Royal Canadian Mounted Police or the Quebec Provincial Police or whatever.
G20 thing.
Yeah, got busted, cold busted, for running around among peaceful protesters saying, well, let's hit somebody.
Yeah.
Hey. Yeah. By the way, Patty just dropped a note and she said, Obama in Afghanistan. She said, if you were President Obama, wouldn't you want to be all the way in Afghanistan when you told us your base that you were trapping us in Afghanistan until 2024?
What was that? Did they actually come out with a date like that?
I'm waiting for the follow up. I
thought it was 2014.
Well, that's what it was last time.
Well, no. The thing is, I think that the money changers are probably whispering at Obama that he has to wrap that up.
You don't think it's good for business anymore?
I know. I'm starting to think that, you know, the sort of. He really is presiding over the decline.
I've always got in the back of my mind that report about, well, there's tons and tons and megatons of lithium in the soil of Afghanistan and rare earth elements and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah,
you don't think we want that stuff?
Yeah, but, I mean, there's still ways of managing that, you know, without the spectacle that's going on now. I just think that he's going to draw down the troops pretty substantially before his term is up, you know what I mean, if he gets back in, that is.
Well,
I don't know. I just don't, because, you know, the economy here is just, I'm sorry, it's just not sustainable if they're going to keep it configured as it is, you know, where you have massive unemployment, like permanently. You just can't sustain.
Well, I saw that one report on the growth of the economy that said, you know, the economy grew at 2.2% and it's lower than anybody wanted. But the takeaway line at the bottom of it, Sandra, was some economists now say that 2.2% indicates the beginning of what is considered a sustainable recovery.
Well, yeah, and you can have a heart attack and that'll lift the gross domestic product. So you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
You know, the indices are all jacked up. I'm not really believing them anymore, especially, like I said.
Well, Krugman on the austerity ferry last week or whenever it was just beautiful, because he sort of exposed the fact that all of this austerity business is entirely a product of the imagination of people who profit by it.
Yeah, and also, it's heartbreaking for average people, when you look at the example of England, they did that by design to go into austerity. They didn't even have to do it. And now they're in recession, and the Tories are scrambling around like the little pigs that they are, trying to privatize the National Health Care Service. I mean, the shit that's going on in England is just, I just shake my head. I'm thinking, my goodness, they are, and they're not, they were nowhere near in the condition that, the continent is in, yet they decided, because they have 5 years to inflict it on the people before they face election. So I don't know what's going to happen to the UK.
And that was what was so disgusting about that story of Her Royal Highness and the bravery and intrepidity that she showed in going to see her really big barge.
That horrible boat. Yeah, that was like my eyes. I couldn't even believe that. I mean, I'm thinking, can't you just fall in there and just call it a day? Shit. No. Listen, you know, that situation in Europe, that's what should be keeping Obama, should be keeping him up at night, because it's not good over there. I mean, Spain, you know, they're in depression. I mean, that is a depression. 30% unemployment.
And we don't hear much about Italy, but things aren't necessarily good there, are they, either?
Well, no, but the only upside is that Roya, I think his name is, the leader of Spain, said to Europe, no, sorry, we cannot meet this benchmark for our budget. We're going over it. That is sort of the first crack in their horrible austerity plan. And the Netherlands is another one. It's like, did you know that government fell the other day?
I saw that.
You know, that's all behind that bullshit, too. Italy, that technocrat is actually making noise about, we need to talk about growth now. This ain't working. And, you know, in the meanwhile, you know, hair, I mean, Fraulein.
Frau.
Blücher. She's trying to hold on, you know, to this fantasy that you can maintain this horrific export economy and expect the other countries to do what? I mean, no, you can't have to beggar thy neighbor, and that's what Germany's doing. They're benefiting, but if they don't have anyone to export to, what's going to happen eventually?
Sooner or later, somebody's got to be able to buy something, right?
Yeah, exactly. No. So that situation over there is nasty, and it's extra nasty because you have the head of the European Central Bank talking about the solution is to dismantle the social contract and compact. That's what they were all about. But I don't know. The last time they did that, you know, how many millions of people died? 50?
Yeah, there was a connection, wasn't there?
Ah, give me a fucking break. But anyway, yeah, so the thing is, though, I'm really scared about the cliff that we're going to be going off of in the lame duck. You know what I mean? There's a lot of things happening during that period, right after the elections here. And it's all backloaded to, you know, really send this economy into a tailspin if they get their way, you know?
Well, if they do, I guess what I'm asking is if they do anything at all.
Well, but an unfettered Obama isn't very, that's not very comforting to me either, with his reform fetish for entitlement. Don't forget, you know what I mean?
Oh, no, see, I remember, I will be a long time forgetting what Alan Grayson said on that boat in the middle of the Caribbean, you know, about how the President Obama told him, you know, if Mr. President, if you could do one thing that you wanted to, what would it be? You know, world peace. No, his answer was reform entitlements.
Well, you know, and I looked at that whole Hamilton speech again. You know, one of the things he said was that, well, with the baby boomers, you know, retiring, and those programs were designed in 1938. Same thing said about Glass-Steagall, too, right? You know, so...
Yeah, it outlived its usefulness.
Right, that whole song and dance, and it's just like... You know, so that worries me with him, and I'm only speaking about it because I really don't know what has to happen in order for Romney to be elected. I don't see it. I don't know. Maybe, I mean, I know we have a few months, but getting back to him, have you ever seen anyone so horrible?
You mean just greasy and nasty and?
Yes. Oh God.
Because I saw this the other day, Sandra. And tell me if I'm a little bit nuts or whatever, but I saw a comparison between the baby boomers and so-called Generation X. You know, that's the generation after the baby boomers. That's the generation that starts like 1968.
Oh, okay, right.
And the way it was presented was that there were 80 million baby boomers and 70 million Generation Xers.
Right.
Well, if the whole reason that Social Security is going to collapse is because of the baby boomers... And there's actually just 10 million less Generation Xers. Then how does that whole collapse thing work?
Well, it doesn't work because in 1983, Reagan doubled the payroll taxes to accommodate this baby boomer's retirement. I mean, we're just being told lie after lie. You know, we had 6% FICA taxes when Reagan came to office, and when he left, he doubled it because of the big Social Security Commission with Alan Greenspan and all them other freaks. So they doubled it, and that was supposed to take care of the baby boomers, which it would if they wouldn't be undermining it now. So they're just lying. And what it all comes down to with Social Security is that these rich assholes don't want to pay.
And the reason I ask is because Social Security is the same. It's not the same. It's much more miserly than the European social safety net. And in both instances, basically, you have the 1% wanting that money. It's not that it's going to collapse. They want that damn money. Have I got that part right?
Well, they don't. No, they don't want to cover the maturing, you know, bonds in the system. You know what I mean? They don't want to have to. Make good on it, because in order to make good on it, you know, fair shares, they have to pay in some form or matter, you know? I mean, I just think it's just a way to get rid of a system they've been wanting to get rid of forever.
Well, they didn't want it in the first place.
They just lie, talking about how it's not...
Why can't anybody with a bully pulpit point out the fact that Republicans hated Social Security the minute that it was passed? They have hated it every minute since then, and their stated goal has always been to destroy it. Why can't that be said?
No, and also, why can't it be said that if you just raise the ceiling on it to $200,000, $300,000, or lift it completely, it would be solvent for the next 5,000 years? You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. And
there's a couple of things you can do. You can also lower that damn retirement age to age 62 or 60 and open up the job market wide open. I mean, it's so backwards here, and so it makes you see what the real agenda is, which is to, you know, turn everybody just desperate.
And take the money and run.
With no security, and that's it.
Because what? I mean, what happens to that money, Sandra, if the right wing gets hold of it? If the 1% gets hold of it?
Well, I'm not too sure about all that, because I know there's a lot of laws in place to protect that program. So that's why they're taking the propaganda tack to undermine it, because it's fine. That's the thing. The program is fine. And like I said, the idea that they can't have a discussion to raise the ceiling is disgusting, because that would solve the problem, and they should be increasing the benefits, not raising retirement ages. I mean, everything points to strengthening the system, and it will help the economy overall in so many different ways, and taking care of the health care.
Yeah, and see, our buddy Benedict is in the chat room, and he just said, they want that damn money, but it doesn't exist and never did. There is no question of Social Security solvency, Benedict notes. He says, there's never any question of solvency with a sovereign fiat currency. The government of the United States can never become insolvent as a matter of, I don't know what you'd call it, not as a matter of law or physics or as a matter of economics, I suppose.
Well, I guess unless the nation state or of the U.S. cease to exist. Yeah, I know, I guess, yeah.
Right. It's like these idiots that prattle on about the debt. My own senator, Blanche Manchin, was addressing the Chamber of Commerce of Beckley, West Virginia, Friday night, and all he could talk about was debt, that this debt is going to kill us, this debt's going to choke us to death, our economy's going to be destroyed by this debt. But it's all BS.
Well, not only that, but, I mean, you know, the inequality weighs heavily on that. I mean, you know, the whole idea that all you ever hear people doing is bragging about how many billionaires are here. Well, see, that's part of the problem. All the productivity gains are not going to the people who are increasing productivities. I mean, the workers are being so screwed in this country. If you look at charts, you see productivity going off the chart and wages going down.
Oh, every other day there's another political speech out there. American workers are the most productive workers in the world. That means they're working more for less.
Right, and all the money is being pushed upward. I mean, it's just a travesty what's going on, you know. And if you're working, it's just getting worse and worse and worse. And they want to completely undermine what little safety net there is. I don't really know. I'm not too sure how they're going to be able to justify it, though, because one thing you can thank Occupy for is that more Americans are aware of the inequality, just on the strength of that, which is a real problem for the elite. If they're going to turn around and say, sorry, we can't provide any safety net anymore, but we need to lower these taxes right here for these rich people. It ain't working.
Well, I mean, look at the polling data on the Buffett rule.
Yeah, exactly.
70% of Americans... And you know, a plurality of teabaggers, for God's sakes.
Right, and you have and that's why people are having serious conversation about that the Republicans could possibly lose the House, because Ryan is not helping their cause. you know, he's stammering and stuttering now because people are starting to ask, maybe your budget is a bit of a problem for your party. Stammer, stammer, stammer. So, no, the Republicans are probably cursing Occupy because they don't want average Americans to be thinking about, you know, why some son of a bitch got $40 billion and they can't, you know, take care of their sick kid. They don't want people to make those sort of connections. Americans never did that before. You know, we always just dealt with our own misery and called it a day. But now people are starting to say, well, why does this son of a bitch got to go to Venice for lunch? He lives in New York.
Because, I don't know, because the martini was invented in Venice?
Well, I'm just saying, I mean, this is the sort of...
No, I understand.
You know, that these people have, but I think, you know, as the curtain is drawn, I don't really think, you know, your average hard-working person is appreciating hearing about we need to lower taxes on these people even further.
No.
From Ryan or Obama, you know, all of them. They all can go to hell. You know, I just think that... So this election might be kind of interesting, although I'm scared of the it's not who vote but who counts. That's a bit of a problem.
Well, it is a bit of a problem, and I've got a little... Oh, Jesus, I don't want to sound like, you know, Tom Friedman out there talking to cabbies or anything, but... or is that David Brooks that talks
shut
to cabbies?
Up. No, it's Friedman. Suck on this. That guy? Yeah.
Yeah.
Shut up, man.
No, I'm going to be gone on the road next Tuesday, so I wanted to make sure I got my voting done for our West Virginia primary. And
that's
so I went over
in
and
June, right?
No, it's next Tuesday.
Oh, wow, okay.
So I went over and voted, and the woman asked me, you know, at the grocery store they ask you paper or plastic, and at the early voting, do you want to vote with a paper ballot or do you want to vote with a with our video game over here? And I said, no, I'll take the paper ballot, thanks. I don't do video game voting. And I said it exactly that way. And she said, you know, I'm a poll worker, so I'm not allowed to ask these kind of questions. But I have so many people tell me that they won't use that machine, and I just wonder why it is. And I said, well, I don't want to cause any trouble, but it's because they are proven to be insecure and manipulable, and there's no way to verify that the vote you cast is the vote that gets counted.
Yeah, that's a pretty clear explanation. Did that resonate?
Well, I'm just going to have to read up on some of this. I said, I strongly suggest you do, and I wish to goodness our Secretary of State would. But even so, the paper ballot that I got, Sandra, was, you know, an optical scan.
Well, yeah, I was about to say, then they still, you know, it's still sort of Stalin who does the counting, isn't
precisely.
It? So that's a bit of a worry to me. Also, the sort of, you know... The sort of inattention that the Democratic Party has given to the voter ID business that's happening all
and
over.
And see, I had that creepy moment. I walked up and they said, what's your name? And I told them, and I whipped out, without even thinking, I whipped out my voter registration card. And then it occurred to me, why should I have to do that if I'm on the voter rolls?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, that's, and also, you know, it's just there is no fraud. That's the thing. It's just outright lies when you look at the numbers, you know. I think they had 11 cases between 2000 and 2008 in the whole damn country.
And see, I was having a phone conversation earlier today, and I mentioned the fact that, you know, Wisconsin has a primary and a general recall election coming up in the space of a month. And that's going to be both sides are going to be watching. That's going to be a bellwether for how much can be gotten away with and how pissed off the American people are. If Scott Walker gets bounced out on his ass, it's a good sign. And the Senate is almost certain to turn Democratic, and that's a good sign.
No, but do you see how much money that man has raised? More money than they ever seen. It's like $25 million or something. He's already spent 20. And it's just out of control, and I guess I heard someone was talking, Nichols was saying that he's raised like, you know, $8 million, and it all came from out of the state. Just unimaginable type of campaign financing going on.
Oh, and these aren't little $5 and $10 contributions.
No, he raised $1 million in Florida, just Florida alone.
Yeah.
But that's an important. I don't even know what.
You know, bless Brad Friedman's heart. He'll be all over. He'll be all over Wisconsin like a dog on a bone wagon, and we'll find out just how dodgy an affair it is in terms of who counts the votes.
Oh, I know, but see, that's I can't even stress how important it is for him to go bye-bye, not just for a message to Republicans, but also a message to Obama. I mean, I'm sorry, we got to look past the election here, because I just think that we're going to be fighting for our lives here, no matter who's in the White House.
Well, and that's the thing. The White House is somewhat, and you know, I've been hollering this for a while now, Sandra. The White House is somewhat of a distraction, because the fact of the matter is, can you imagine John Boehner, Speaker of the Senate, and Mitch McConnell, Speaker of the House, and Mitch McConnell, Senate Majority Leader? Can you imagine that? Can you imagine the absolutely hallucinogenic, crazy shit that they will just fold into paper airplanes and fly onto Obama's desk? And how many of them he'll sign?
Yeah. Oh, no. It's really quite disturbing, you know. But it's also disturbing just how distorted our system has become, and it just seems to be stuck in stupid because, you know, like I said, if I may go back to the fact that I've been following politics since I was 13, and the prominence of the filibuster, that's a joke. You know, that whole thing is just an outrage that we can get a majority and we still can't get anything done. I mean, the Senate is about as undemocratic as it was before 1917. They elected the Senate, you see? I mean, it's outrageous what's going on in our system is paralyzed. And it can't address these massive problems that we have, Bob. And I just don't, I'm not too sure what has to change.
Well, I can tell you this much. I've gotten emails in from Patty. It is not going to help. Patty just sent me a screenshot, okay? And it's Barack Obama standing in Afghanistan, and the font underneath him, from MSNBC, says presidential address, deal keeps U.S. troops in Afghanistan until 2024. The New York Times has it, RT has it, the long-awaited withdrawal of U.S. troops from Afghanistan may not be as full as had been expected. The U.S. will help defend the country militarily for at least a decade after Afghans take control of their security, a national security advisor said. The pledge is contained in the new strategic pact agreed between the two countries on Sunday.
So, one of those SOFA agreements, they already have one of those?
Just done.
That means that horrible lobbyist has given immunity to God. I mean, God help us if that's the case. Wow, 2024.
And, you know, I hate to do the whole I told you so thing, but, you know, welcome to the empire.
Well, no, but, I mean, 2024, damn, Ferg, he might be married with kids.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, where are the nieces going to be in 2024?
Oh, my God. Well, listen, okay.
You know, and you and me, we're going to be gumming our oatmeal.
Oh, yeah, you know, old is, you know, let's nod and say we did. Anyway. Wow. I don't know. I can't even. Yeah. Well.
No. It's some tough gristle to chew. And like I said, you know, this isn't just crazy talk. The New York. You know.
Yeah. He signed the some sort of Afghan pact. God,
yeah. On surprise trip to Kabul, Obama signs Afghan pact. With this agreement, the Afghan people and the world should know that Afghanistan has a friend and a partner in the United States. With this agreement, I am confident that the Afghan people will understand that the United States will stand by them. Well, see, that's Karzai's deal, Sandra. That's not the Afghan people's deal.
No.
It's Karzai feeling his head getting a little wobbly on top of his shoulders.
Well, I can't imagine that he's going to be in power for that. I'm sorry, I think he's definitely a marked idiot. I guess he looked at, I can be taken out by the U.S. or by people here and he opted to sign the agreement? I mean, who knows?
Well, yeah, I mean, that was that was Hamid Karzai. You've got a phone call from President Diem.
Yeah. Yeah, no. He's terribly corrupt, that guy. But anyway, wow, okay.
Yeah, I know. It's not exactly one to make you want to get out the dancing shoes. I understand.
Oh no, and also it just seems really very implausible. And you know, because the Obama administration is known for smoke and mirrors. So I'm not saying that it's not the case, but you know, I just read today that they slipped in the abstinent only education as part of their sex education thing.
No.
Yeah, they slipped that in. So it's just like, oh, God, okay.
Lovely little pun there. They slipped it in.
Yeah, well, I didn't mean it to be
a pun. Yeah, sometimes it just happens. Oh, by the way, I got to back us up for just a minute. We started out talking about Texana Ignorama Edwards.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got a picture. I finally got a picture over here standing next to her, you know, size 26 dress. And, I mean, that is one big Confederate flag, and it's all spangly and sparkly. But that's not the telling point. You know me, Sandra. I'm always one for looking at the details. So
yeah.
There it is, hanging on a plastic hanger from a nail in the wall. But over her left shoulder, of course, is a cross. But the best part of all is the T-shirt that Texana Ignorama Edwards is wearing.
What's it say?
It don't say anything. It's a yellow, I don't know, maybe not. I don't know. Maybe they don't have these in California. Or maybe they don't where you are or whatever. But when you're out in a rural area where deer are prone to leap in front of your automobile at the last possible moment, and, I mean, we have tons of deer damage here to cars and stuff. It's why my rates are probably higher than yours or folks out there. So they put these yellow signs up on rural roads that just show a buck leaping, okay? Now, Texana Ignorama Edwards is wearing a shirt with that sign on it, but the sign has bullet holes in it. And that's a very real thing in Jesus land. The Bubbas and the Bubettes will get all good and drunked up on their Milwaukee's Beast Light or their Keystone Light or you know whatever's going for $5.99 a 12 pack down to the Rippy Mart, and go driving around and they will shoot the deer signs in the absence of a deer itself to shoot.
Well, I mean,
that's what Bubette here is wearing, a black T-shirt with a yellow deer crossing sign that's got bullet holes. You know, imitation bullet holes in the sign itself. I mean,
well, the picture that I saw, you know, it was hanging up on like some sort of fake wood paneling, and I just had a flash of.
Oh yeah, that's yeah.
I had a flash of the Angry Grandpa series. You know, I thought, oh God, is that from that show?
You know, what an idiot. Because,
yeah,
see, it is 2012.
Exactly.
And in 2012, if you don't know that wearing something like that to your prom is intended as being nothing, it is, I don't care what kind of excuses they make, you have to know at the end of the day that it is fundamentally inflammatory. And if you insist upon wearing it, then you are wearing it for its inflammatory value. There's no escaping it. Am I okay so far?
Well, exactly.
So this girl deliberately wanted to inflame people at her high school. She was, for all intents and purposes, within First Amendment meanings or First Amendment definitions, her dress constitutes yelling fire in a crowded theater. It is a deliberate incitement.
Yeah, I just looked at her. I said, "Oh my God, what an absolute dumbass!" I don't know.
Yeah, ignorama.
Oh, listen, I have to see if you saw this. My son went to heaven. That story.
Oh.
Did you?
Yeah.
Did you
yeah. You talking about the little book that's like a multi-billion seller in Walmart?
Right. I really would like to hear your opinion about that. That one just floored me. I'm like, of course, Jesus was white.
Oh, of course, he wasn't even Jewish anymore. He probably growed his foreskin back and stuff.
Oh my God, that whole thing was so disturbing. I'm just like, wow.
And you know, mommy and daddy were there to profiteer on little sick Sonny's back, you know, straight away.
No, but that son of a bitch is still around making videos and talking about the story that happened to him, you know, 10 years ago or whatever it was. And it's just like. It's the Left Behind. I'm thinking
that's exactly it sits on the same shelf.
Yeah, no, I'm thinking that market is so lucrative.
Have you?
Well,
you probably don't go into Wally World, but if you were, you would be astonished if you walked into the so-called book section.
I worked as a Wally World, so yeah, I go in it. The last time I went, I was confronted with a big ass picture of Steve Jobs. I'm like, ah. His damn book. So no, I know what you're talking about.
Well, if it's not Harlequin romances and bodice rippers, it's vampire books, and then the rest of the section is devoted to inspirational books about Jesus and people's imaginary interactions with him.
Yeah. Okay.
My son went to heaven.
Whole wall of the Left Behind and
right, and you know, I guess you couldn't sell a bajillion books. Golden Gideon Cross bookstore, if your book was my 7-year old hallucinated while that he was dead, you know, that just doesn't sell.
Yeah.
By the way, you'll get a kick out of this, David from Maine, who keeps his thumb on this pulse at all times, just wrote in and said, eBay lists Confederate dresses. Go check it out. You can't sell Nazi memorabilia on eBay, but you can sell Confederate flag dresses. David in Maine just says, "Wow." So,
see that tops, you know, the other thing that was doing my head in with Amazon. You know Farmville, that frightening setup. So they have a book called Dummies, Farmville's for Dummies. You know that series?
No.
Yeah, and the worst part, there was like, when I checked, there was one book left in stock, man. It had Amazon. Think about it.
Farmville.
You know, what's happening? What is happening to the world? Well, you got people, I don't know. I have issues with the Farmville stuff does my head in. That's
well, and it all started with Mafia Wars. A good buddy of mine was in on the ground floor of Mafia Wars. I think he's a capo de tutti capo now or something. But it's Farmville, it's Mafia Wars, it's Defend Your Medieval Castle. Oh, Jesus.
No, but notice how it, but thing is so dangerous, how it can easily morph into, and can you please let us have access to your organs? You understand what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, that was beautiful. Mark Zuckerberg wants everybody to note their organ donor status on their Facebook page.
Well, that's Farmville, all right. That's farming you.
that's Farmville, and everybody just got access to the harvester.
Yeah. Anyway, no. I understand. You know what the
because you know Dick Cheney had such a hard damn time finding a heart.
Oh no, we know what time it is, and that's why that story really rubbed me. Because it's like, wait, this nasty ass plutocrat is telling all his followers on his fucked up Facebook to make sure that they alert whoever about giving up their organs. I mean, I don't know. It just was, you know.
You think he might go ahead and spring for everybody on Facebook to have some blood typing done?
Well, it's just nothing is benign with Facebook. So anytime there's some sort of pronouncement from headquarters, I'm always like going, oh no, you know, I need to deactivate this shit today.
Well,
keep forgetting.
No, I get that about every day. I think that because I get, and this is no intended insult to any of the real people with whom I'm actually acquainted via the show and via Facebook.
Sure.
I mean, I've got like old high school friends and.
Oh no! Listen. Obviously, yeah. It's very useful. Don't get me wrong about that, but there's just.
But I've got friends I've never heard of.
Well, no, see, and just think about the idea that you're being forced to turn over passwords and stuff. It's like, well, hold on. Not only are you going to invade my privacy, but...
No, I won't let anything sign in with Facebook.
Right. I mean, no. Oh, God, no. You know, I'm forever battling because, you know, I use Twitter quite a bit, and it's like, oh, we want to use... No, you're not going to use my account for nothing. You know, if you use this application, it will do this, and this.
It will look at all your friends. It will...
It'll send random tweets now and then. I'm like, oh, no. So, I just...
No.
I have this one application that shortens the links, and that is it. It's all manual because I cannot be dealing with, you know, the bot mentality of the interweb where 80% of it is not human anymore, and it gets just too weird.
Oh, no. No, no, no. I mean, if you see a tweet from me that says Bob Kincaid, I wrote it.
Yeah,
and I try to keep it that way.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, you know, because it's just when I started reading the fine print, because I get into that with the various internet stuff now because it's so...
Oh, you must have seen the South Park episode where Stan or Kyle, was it, which one, didn't read his end-user license agreement for Apple.
No, I didn't see that.
That's worth looking up. Yeah, it's actually a little too distasteful to describe on the air, but you want to read that agreement.
Well, you know, I've damn near given up using my Gmail mail because of this cross platform now. You know what I mean? Because, you know, I use YouTube a lot, but I said, well, I guess, you know, so I don't really use Gmail that much because I cannot get with the, oh, by the way, don't worry. But, you know, we're going to cross-reference every possible free app that you have access to. And, yeah, we know you're creating free content for us, but we need all this so we can monetize it and sell it to our weird third-party corporations. You don't mind, do you?
No, shucks, no. That's why I keep clicking that little box every time you ask me to. No, but you know, if there's any comfort, and it is marginal and cold comfort at best, It is that Google's algorithms are dumber in the head than a hog is in the ass, Sandra. And I say that because I just, for instance, I sent an email to somebody, and I used the word Vermont in my email.
Yeah.
So I have a friendly linky now from the Gmail algorithm to tell me that I can visit Vermont Country Store at VermontCountryStore.com. Official site, practical and hard-to-find items. Shop online today. Well, there wasn't anything in my email about the Vermont Country Store, but yeah, Google read Vermont, and, well, you know, he might be stupid enough to try this. Or at least he'll click the link and make us a penny.
Oh, yeah, no, listen, I know it just sounds crazy, but you would just be amazed by how many, I got all kinds of no cookies on the computer, utilities up the ass. I am, like, borderline paranoid at this point. But, listen, my computer runs really well because it ain't nothing on it.
Well, when I finally get time to tear this one down and rebuild it, I'm putting a condom on it. I really, really am.
Well, no, at any rate, I mean, you know, and of course, at the end of the day, I always say, if I put stuff out there, I know. It's just out there. I have no illusions. But on the other hand, I'm not throwing up pictures of my loved ones in every kind of position and, you know, outing either. It's ridiculous. Don't do it.
I have to, if they're, okay, so you, Sandra, have your eyes wide open in dealing with all of this stuff. Oh, you've got some fun coming when the nieces get a little bit older, they're not already there.
No, that's already, you know, they just think, oh, my God, Sandra is just crazy. I know they do. But that's just how it has to go. It's like when I have a dirt nap, you know, it ain't a worry. But in the meanwhile, no, I just, you know.
Because, I mean, I'm, and Agnes is, too. You know, we're on top of teenagers about all this stuff. And I'm like, no, there's just, you know, just because it enters your brain does not mean you need to run and type it onto Facebook. Because, see, where you and I and the Horn family, we recognize it as foreign and intrusive. Well, Facebook's been around long enough now that it's a perfectly normal part of your average 14-year-old's life.
Well, yeah, no. I mean, and these girls are not. I mean, they don't. No, they have nothing going on. They play. They have a few little sites they go to play little games, but there is no.
I mean, look at what that sleazy Tucker Carlson website did to Trayvon Martin.
Yeah, no. That's what I'm saying. It's like they're better off not having any presence on there for as long as possible. I mean, I don't see any reason for it, you know. But everyone has, you know. I don't know. I've been seeing more and more articles about people disengaging from Facebook, at least. That's why that IPO, they really trying to rush that shit out because...
Yeah, before it turns...
what Facebook will be doing in 5 years?
Yeah, before it turns into MySpace.
No, MySpace, though. I mean, did we have a conversation about how MySpace, it just keeps popping up now in these, like, ghetto trials? Because MySpace was real popular amongst, let's say, the trailer trash and black trash and whatnot. And so they are still using that evidence from, like, 5 years ago. It's being used in court cases now.
Yeah.
I remember when I first saw MySpace, I thought, oh, my God, it's so ghetto. This is too much.
All sparkly and stuff. And that's why Rupert Murdoch said, I've got to have that.
Yeah. Well, no, but Facebook is the same. I mean, it'll be the same way. The information is being turned on people, you know, in court now. I don't know. It's just something really, you know, I'm just thinking, if they ever want to subpoena, you know, my Twitter account, you know, what? I don't ever talk about anything but politics, so I don't really know what they can get out of it.
Well, yeah, and you occasionally agree. I laughed out loud when I saw your response to Isaac the other day and his picture comparing Melissa Harris Perry to one of the creatures from Galaxy Quest.
I don't even know what I wrote. I know it was obnoxious.
You said, be careful, she's a darling of the left.
Oh, right.
the thing is, Galaxy Quest gets a little bit more relevant every day, it seems. It's...
No way! You did not... Listen, that was so damn funny, though. I was laughing for a while.
You know, the bad guy monster with his gun that looks like a submarine sandwich? You know, Agnes even quotes the movie. You know, she'll read road signs and she'll say, Jesus, this is pitiful. I've turned into the character from Galaxy Quest. All I do is repeat what the computer says.
I know, but Isaac was so wrong to do that to that woman. Anyway.
Yeah, and the other project that I need to whisper into the universe's ear, I got an email the other day. I got an internet. It was the original 1971 movie poster of Willard. And it's just kind of a line drawing of a rat's face coming out of the darkness.
Right.
And it's like, this one will scare you to death. And at the bottom it just says, Willard. And I wrote back and I said, oh, God, where's our Photoshop genius when we need him or need her? Because it would be so easy to morph, Photoshop, whatever, Willard Romney's face onto that rat, and then we're just done.
Oh, no. When was that movie made, anyway?
71, 72.
Oh, yeah, wasn't there just some fantastic movies like that made?
And didn't Michael Jackson do the moving,
Ben,
beautiful theme to it?
Ben, right?
Yeah, but was Ben a separate movie?
I don't think it was. I thought it was from it. I mean, I don't, you know, my memory's been fuzzy on that. I'm starting to think about the Attack of the Killer Tomatoes and When Hell is Full, They'll Walk the Earth. I mean, you know.
No one will be admitted after the first 5 minutes.
Oh, well, yeah.
Oh, by the way, a little contribution came. Well, not a little contribution, a very nice contribution came in during the course of our phone call. And Ray in Arizona said, Bob, tell Sandra hello for me. She reminds me of my big sister talking shit while growing up.
Well, that's good. That's good. We always have to have that segment or that sort of level of discourse. You know, just to just to keep it angry and, you know, I don't know.
And you know, more than a little bit focused. I mean, we have our fun, but it's very focused fun, I think.
Yeah, well.
Oh, okay. Correction coming in from Marty, who knows these kinds of things. Ben was the sequel to Willard.
Okay, right. But see, now that song is in my head, and it was such a bizarre song.
Well, I'm so glad, and here's another story of, okay, life in the world of the interweb tubes. When I got back from D.C., and I did the show on Thursday night or Friday or whatever it was, when I need a piece of bumper music, I'll often run off and pay 99 cents for it. Okay?
Yeah, sure.
Because I like to pay. And lo and behold, somebody at Amazon or somebody peeping in on Amazon scammed my debit card number. And the next morning I woke up and found out that I had just spent $157 at a gas station in Verdun, France.
Well, yeah, but weren't you able to recoup that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I got on it right away, but the only remedy to it is to, you know, chop the credit card, the debit card up into itsy-bitsy, teeny-tiny little pieces and then, you know, wait while the problem gets resolved.
Right, where they credit your account and send you another card.
Yeah, and that takes, you know, that's like ordering something off the TV in 1976. It takes, 4 to 6 weeks for delivery.
Oh, wow.
Which actually turned into 46 weeks for delivery. That's what they meant all along. But you know, because I went and bought a song, somebody was able to, you know, nobody else in America would see Verdun, France, and immediately start having all of this World War I stuff run through his head. But
well,
me.
That's a bit frightening.
And when I called the financial institution, I said, you know, what the hell's going on here? They said, well, you know what? We have a lot of problems with Amazon. And they said, apart from that, though, and this is the consumer alert program, there are some sort of wireless thingies where sleazy, skeevy people hang out at gas stations. I guess because the card reader that you put in to buy gasoline is wirelessly connected to the station itself and not necessarily hardwired. So, ba-thump. And they snag your credit card information.
Right.
They nick it that way.
Yeah, and some gas stations, I mean, Shell gas station is notorious for having, you know, for that kind of stuff happening, actually.
Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah, that was going on here in California, you know, to the point where, you know, I was just rolling up with cash. I don't even bother with the machines anymore. Anyway.
Yeah, I will ever again.
Well, that's terrible. Well, okay, at least you were covered. You know, they weren't trying to say, no, you're in France, it has to be you.
Right. But, I had to send them an affidavit swearing I wasn't in Verdun. And of course, you know, you love the historical knowledge of the Horn family, Sandra. This is beautiful. Bill from Cleveland just wrote in and said, Verdun, they shall not gas. You know, Verdun, they shall not pass from the First World
right.
War.
Right. Yeah. Oh, boy.
Oh, jeez. Well, Sandra, it's been a delightful conversation, and I've enjoyed it immensely.
Oh, yeah. Well, have a good evening.
I'm going to try. You take
okay.
care.
Bye.
Bye now. Sandra calling from California. I'm still just stunned by this stupid Confederate dress. I mean, and you, Bill, you. Verdun, they shall not. Gas. You have no shame, sir. No shame whatsoever. So we find her. Wow, where'd those 2 hours go? Probably the same place that the next one's about to, and in rapid fire fashion, no less. It never ceases to amaze me. You know, 6 o'clock rolls around, and then the next thing you know, I'm looking up, going, damn. Okay. Thanks, Marty. See, we're getting all sorts of help here. Ben was the rat. Willard was the misfit, played by Bruce Davison, who played the X-Men's Senator Kelly. Ben was the rat. Willard was the misfit. I guess if they had remade it, well. Did they do a remake? Did they do a remake that involved that creepy guy who was karate kicking on Letterman's show one night? What's his name? Yeah. What do you mean I just outlined your retirement to the Lees, Marty? Play the lottery? Mega Millions is like $100 million or so. So I got my ticket. Oh, it would be nice. It would be nice to open the microphone and never again do another fundraising pitch. So, you know, you buy your ticket. You take your chances. Now, let's see. Let's keep things going. Nope. Okay, try again. You guys have no patience. Well, anyway, if you want to jump in, you know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. For direct dial purposes, of course, you can reach the program 304-658-3333. Email comes in to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, @gmail.com. I knew it! Thank you, Marty. Crispin Glover, that's the guy, played George McFly. Yeah, there was a Willard remake, and yeah, Crispin Glover played Willard. Oh, okay, I get it. when I was talking to Sandra about, can you imagine a world where John Boehner is Speaker of the House and Mitch McConnell is Majority Leader in the Senate, and they're just flying paper airplanes onto Obama or Romney's desk. Yeah, that's Marty's retirement plan. He says, off to Belize. That spells expat for me. And I more than understand that impulse. I get more than a little itchy just sitting around here in the mountains, waiting to get blown up some more. Yeah, he was Michael J. Fox's father in the second, I guess, Back to the Future. So, I guess go on or take a break. I'd kind of like to take a break, but I got nothing in my head in the way of something for a bumper. Or a piece of bumper music. I don't know, let's do that thing we used to do with the hymnal in church, where you just pick one. What do we got? Yeah, let's try that just for fun. This will be enjoyable. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is the horn. Like I said, sometimes I get the itch to get out of here. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
10 past the hour as we move into the last 45, 47 minutes of the program tonight. It is too weird not to be Flu Tuesday. That's a mouthful. We got to come up with something better. We just did. Just got an uplifting email from the folks at Nation of Change. I get their email updates every day, and they're proud to announce that they've met their spring goal. They basically send out an email every day telling you progressive news comments. I'm very happy for them. They've met their spring goal of $50,000. It's nice. It's pretty nice. Good for them. Interesting. Just following up on all the trivia, the little trivia closet that Sandra and I opened. In terms of Willard and Ben and the theme song. Isaac with a follow-up. You're going to love this one. Oh, you're going to love this one a lot. This is just beautiful. The producer of Willard was Bing Crosby. Isaac sent that along. That's just... Isaac said he liked that last track. That was, of course, Santana covering the Chuck Berry classic Havana Moon. I love that. I love that rendition. I love the original, too. I was playing, because I'm weird this way, I was playing Chuck Berry tracks for Ferg earlier today, just trying to, because there's some pop song out that's got a little shuffle to it, and it's one of those dun da dun da dun da dun 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 dun, and he goes, "This is Doodle's favorite song, his baby sister." And I went, and he had immediately figured out how to play that particular riff on his guitar, and he was sitting there, nunk 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 nunk. I said, "Son, we got to talk." And he said, "What?" And I clackety 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 clack, and he said, "Look at you, Dad, thumbing away like a teenager." I was kind of proud of that little moment. I really was. And so, trying to do my bit for rock and roll literacy, having heard that dunk a dunk a dunk a dunk dunk, that, well, I fired up the YouTubes, and I got him a track, a classic track, of the recently passed away and much mourned great man, Johnny Otis, and the original Willie and the Hand Jive, which incidentally has right smack dab in the middle of it that chunk, 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 chunk. Yeah, got a cool little chick named Rockin' Millie. Right, I'm not going to sing. And I love those little eye-opening moments for Ferg, because I said, "Now, let's go up to Chuck Berry." And so I played him the original Havana Moon, then I played him the Santana Havana Moon. And then I said, "But wait." And so he sees, I said, "You know, Chuck Berry was the original showman." And I showed him a track of him, doing the duck walk and everything, and getting down on the floor and all of that stuff. And I said, "What do you think of that?" He said, "Hmm." And so, clackety, 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 clack, again we go, and there we are at Pete Townsend. And clackety, clack, and there's Jimi Hendrix setting fire to his guitar. I said, "Are you beginning to get the theme here, son?" He said, that everybody else is following someone that went before. I said, "Precisely." And then I played him a clip of Keith Richards saying, The minute I heard Chuck Berry, I knew what I wanted to do with my life." And so then we went forward, and I showed him some punk, which built on you know, Pete Townsend's antics and said, ain't nobody doing nothing original. Because when you get right down to it, nothing is. The fundamental creative impulses in human beings stem from a common humanity. And it doesn't matter what tradition or what style you come from. There is a common element of humanity. And that's just what it's like around here. Of course, today is the 19th anniversary of Agnes and I exchanging vows on a hill, on a West Virginia hilltop. I've told the story before, but we had the wedding outside. It was a beautiful, beautiful day. You could not have asked for better. And outside, under the sun, beautiful. And of course, the entire wedding was watched through the scope mounted on a .30-06 rifle as the individual watching decided whether or not he wanted Agnes and me to die. But he decided to let us live, and aren't you glad? I am. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, I'm glad he decided to let you live. How are you doing today, Brother Bob?
Pretty good, Brother Albert. How about you?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, I just picked up a couple of pizza ovens, and...
No, really?
Yeah.
Man, this thing's moving along.
It has to. It really, really does. It's actually... now I'm trying to pick up all the pieces. I've set, like, it's like a box of ball bearings I've spilled all over the floor, and now I'm trying to pick them up. You know, I got this one to do and this one to talk to.
Well, have you been in contact with Sister Patty?
I have been in contact with her, but my mom just got here the other day and yesterday, so, you know, it's just been one of those days. Patty, I'm coming. I'll get you. We'll talk. I promise. I can't wait, you know. But yeah, it's just been a little, it's been a little hectic. I'm trying to move as fast as possible. They're old ovens, though. This is an old school oven.
You know what? If you can rehab those things to where they need to be, you know, check, they're gas ovens, right?
Yes, sir. Yes,
yeah,
sir.
Check all the orifices and everything. Those are going to be better than new.
That's kind of what I'm thinking.
You know, they're broke in. They've got the carbonized char on the oven floor. You know, the pies will slide right off the split and onto the... Oh, man, it's going to be good.
Yeah, I sure hope so. I might have to update a few little parts here and there, but, you know, I guess 500 for two is a lot better than 5,000 for one.
Hear, hear.
And I don't want to get too over my head, and you know, because I'd like to make a business, a real business of it, you know. And I don't have a cocaine issue, so I should be all right. Because that seems to be a
yeah, not snorting your profits is really the key. Is really the key to the business plan.
Yeah, I can't see the allure to it anyway. But I guess, you know, if
that's the thing. You're kind of alive enough. I can't imagine. No, just can't imagine. Yeah. And see, you know, you can get the $5,000 oven after the first store is a rousing success and you begin to branch out.
That's exactly my thought. That's exactly how I'm looking at it. You know, this is going to be, you know, if you do the math, you know, you sell 25 pies a day. That's pretty good money. So I'm not going to be too greedy, and I just want to produce. I just want people's eyes thrown in the back of their head. And, you know, I'm going to paint these ovens. Right now they're kind of black. I'm going to grind them out and paint them nice and red. I think red would be a nice, happy pizza color. Plus, it would kind of fit. They had to have been made in the 40s, late 40s, early.
Oh, man, those are going to be some awesome ovens.
Yeah,
are they Vulcans?
I can't tell. I can't tell yet. He was going to put them, there's a pizza guy out here, you know, friends of the in-laws, and he was going to make another shop. And then he was like, you know, because some of these towns out here, you know, they're an hour away from each other. And, you know, I'm getting too old for this crap. I'll just handle the one place. And I think he had seven tables, and, you know, he was pulling over 200 a year.
Well, you know, Michael, Kid A from the chat room, who also has spent his fair share of time in the state of Wisconsin, having grown up there and gone to the fine university there in Madtown. Michael just wrote in to say, pizza party. When's the first annual Horn Pizza Party in Wisconsin? Set the date.
I can't wait. I can't wait to host that. Oh, absolutely. Don't worry about bringing no money. It's just pizza. It's really not that expensive.
and some of that awesome Wisconsin craft beer, you know, the stuff that doesn't come from giant corporate conglomerates. It just gives me the chills thinking about it.
I'm gonna have some Pearl Street on tap, no doubt. Probably gonna have some of the other. I know the brewer. He's a friend of mine, so you know he might be able to.
That is a beautiful, beautiful phrase, Brother Albert. I know that brewer. He's a friend of mine.
Yes, sir. It's not bad.
It's like the story, Dr. Bill O'Brien had his retirement from Concord University reception a week ago last Friday. And his assistant, who was, of course, raised very much the teetotaler type that we have here in West Virginia, she recounted the story of her and Dr. Bill. She went to Dr. Bill one day and said, my granny, and this happens around here, not just in Truman Capote stories, Albert. She said, my granny is making a cake and she needs some bourbon. And I don't know anything about bourbon. Where do you go to get bourbon, Dr. Bill? And Dr. Bill, you know, old Bostonian. I mean, he's been down here in the hills forevermore, but he's still an old Bostonian, and he looked at her kind of askance. You kidding me? Where does bourbon? What? And he said, okay, so when we're done running our errands, we'll stop and get your bourbon. And along the way, she said something like, no, I'm not kidding. I don't know how to get it. I don't know how to buy it. Where does it come from? And in that instant, just one of those moments provided courtesy of the universe, that little moment of inspiration, where does it come from? And Dr. Bill just looks at her and says, heaven. It comes from heaven.
Oh, man.
I know that guy. He's a friend of mine. The brewer is in that same sort of.
Oh man! Speaking of heaven, we've had our fair share of religious documentaries over the past few years. There's been a lot of light, you know, shined on these individuals, and I have a recommendation.
Okay.
But you gotta. All right, this one's tough. But it's so raw. The guy who did it is he's an amateur. So he asked these people questions that made them think that he's on their side. And he really got them to open up and just shivers. It's called In God We Trust, and there's a question mark. You can find it at topdocumentaryfilms.com. It's been recently added, so check in the browse section. It's the second one down.
In God We Trust. Question mark.
And what it relates to is how there in North Carolina, I believe it's North Carolina, there is a veterans memorial. And one of our veterans came back from Afghanistan, and he happened to see that they wanted their Christian flag. And they had a Christian flag on this monument that's a government monument. And he said he went to go try to get it taken down, and they refused. And so he contacted the ACLU. And then you get to interview and watch, and I don't want to ruin it for you, but my goodness gracious, what these people don't know about their own religion is so frightening. And then when they find out things like, oh, slavery and put this and that, the justifications they go through, it's almost like blowing onto a swimming pool, making a little divot, and then quickly, oh, God must have changed his mind. There's almost no getting through them. It's like arguing with a libertarian. You know, like one of the worst traps you could ever get involved with on an internet forum is to discuss monetary policy with a libertarian.
It's a trip into the monkey house. It really, really is.
Go get one of those knuckle graders and rub it over your eyes. You'd have more fun. do you call someone who voted for George W. Bush twice and then wants to avoid all personal responsibility for it?
Libertarian.
A libertarian who loves Ron Paul.
And wants to smoke dope.
They always say, sometimes. but at the same time, they'll... you just got to love it. These people, it's just the circular logic that they'll...
Yeah, and, Benedict in the chat room is also noting, Google the phrase, libertarianism makes you stupid.
I will. I am certainly going to. Because you need ammunition when you're dealing with these people, because they don't listen to reason. They have no sense of justice.
Well, Albert, have you run off to the YouTubes yet and viewed Dark Matter 2525's The Book of Job? I played a little teeny tiny snippet of it last night. You owe this to yourself. Everybody who lives in rational world owes this to themselves. It is something approaching perfect. And Dark Matter 2525's other animated videos are equally Jesus, genius, including another classic, The Thing God Can't Do. And you're thinking, grow a limb back, you know, because everybody's always getting their cancer cured, but he's never even grown so much as a knuckle back on. No, it's not that. You owe this, you well and truly owe this to yourself.
Yeah, I was enjoying that part. I was actually on the phone with you last night, and I had to get disconnected because I had a bunch of things I had to do.
I understand completely. No worries.
But I was certainly listening, and yeah, I was enjoying that, and that's why I usually try to avoid a lot of these religious things just because they creep me out, and that's probably why I didn't get, you know, once you get that fire lit, it's like, oh, all right, fine, let's watch that. No, it's just terrible. I mean, you know, you're arguing, God.
Oh, I know, and I've seen some mention of this North Carolina issue because I saw it framed coming from the right-wing religion industrial complex as Obama's trying to take it. Somebody posted that, you know, one of these anonymous people that I click confirm on the stupid Facebook posted something on my wall about our veterans are being assaulted by the heathen atheists.
You know, you will hear some of the, and you probably heard it before, and I try to isolate myself and family from things like that, just because, you know, I don't want to hang out with those people. So I try to stay away from them as much as possible. But the things you allow, and you gotta love them when they don't have them bottom teeth. Oh my God. But, so, this tusk mouth guy, the eyes, the dead eyes on these people. They only light up.
Well, that's because they're already dead here and they're just waiting to go to heaven.
That's right. He's like, well, we gotta find out who made this report. Meanwhile, it's a veteran. The guy who made the complaint is an Afghan. He was a Bronze Star winner. He served in Afghanistan. And he came back, and that's the thing. These people don't comprehend. There is a separation of church and state, you fool. There is. In fact, the Baptists were the ones who said, hey, you know what? That's a pretty good idea. We like that.
Yeah, Jefferson's letter to the Danbury Baptists.
Yeah. We like this. This is good. We don't want the state to be involved with us. We want to be able to, the Jews want to be Jews, let the Jews be Jews. And we wanted those, right? They wanted those riflemen, right? And those riflemen were Presbyterian, right? You know, so it's like, the separation of church and state, yeah. Why do you need everyone to believe like you? And they're all, you know, if you ain't Christian, get out of town. And you know, I like to believe that, you know, my version of America is a tolerant place. That's my idealism.
Yeah, where they can believe any little fairy tale they want to.
Believe, yeah. And,
but
and,
they don't and get to, but they do not get the, yeah. They do not, and this is where it all falls apart, Brother Albert. They do not get to compel the rest of us to go along with their particular fairy tale by engrafting it upon the state.
Oh yeah, they want a theocracy.
I mean, I've got a story here. I didn't get to it yet, and you've very graciously led us right into it. It's a It's a beautiful thing in its ugly sort of theocratic way. It has to do with a right-wing radio host named Matt Barber, Brother Albert. He hosts a very well-funded radio show called Liberty Council's Faith and Freedom radio program. And he was, and now granted, you know, Liberty Council, you know, that's some pretty evangelical fundamentalists, but, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend, and that's a tough philosophy to adhere to. It gets you in trouble sooner or later, but there it is. So, he was all huzzahing. You know, I didn't get a harumph out of that guy. He was harumphing the hell out of the Catholic bishops for standing up to the religious tyranny of Barack Hussein Obama. Okay?
He's a Christian.
He said...
He ain't a Christian.
No, he's not. He's a Muslim.
Muslim.
You didn't know that? Muslim dog eater. They are saying, President Obama, no, we will not comply with this unconstitutional, immoral mandate, Barber explained. And again, in the spirit of Martin Luther King, Jr., they're vowing civil disobedience, and I say, good for them. but that was just the teaser. Because the real beautiful part of it came a little bit later in the broadcast when he said, it says to the mandate does that. It says to the Catholic bishop, it says to the individual Christian, you have no choice. You must embrace our postmodern secularist worldview that says that life is meaningless and the unborn child has no value. And when we all know that it's worth $9.95, right? And you must become complicit in abortion homicide. You must fund, underwrite that slaughter of innocent human beings, or you will be penalized under the full weight of government. Well, and okay, here's the fun part, Albert. You all strapped in real good?
I'm getting there. All right, hang on.
I mean, this, yeah, you're going to have to use the whole Clockwork Orange head frame, eyes propped open, kind of, you know, tennis ball in the mouth thing for this one, okay? I mean, I'm just warning.
All right. Thank you. Yeah.
That is no different than the Muslim terrorist going into the village, holding the gun to your head and saying, kill your family member or you will suffer the full weight of our tyranny. This is all tyranny. This president is engaging in tyranny.
Oh, God. You know...
See, you chewed right through the tennis ball right quick, didn't you?
Real quick. I'll bite a leather belt in half on that. You know, I kind of think, you know, granted, you know, when they wrote, you know, when they started this country out, we had kings and so on and so forth, and they said tyrants, but they never really looked out for how the majority becomes a tyrant. You know, they always talk about, oh, the tree of liberty must be blah, 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 blah. You know, you are tyrants. You are the tyrant. Nobody, for making things fair, for making things equal and just and giving the minority the, you know, an equal footing to not subjugate these people under, you know, this is a Christian country and everything else. Shut. Oh, I can't stand it. I just can't stand this closed-minded, oh, they're persecuting us. God damn, how is it? You people, I wish you would get that. I wish we, just that makes me want Xenu to come back and just start, you know, subjugating, like being a real tyrant. You know, cause
well, that's the whole point. You know, these yeah. Phony baloney evangelical fundamentalists constantly prate on and on and on about how they're being persecuted.
Mm.
But they don't understand. Yeah. They don't understand persecution. Persecution is when you're sitting in the ringside seat watching your sister being pulled to pieces by a wild beast. Okay, that's being persecuted. Being served a cold cup of half-calf latte with extra soy foam that's not fully hotter, that's not 212 degrees by some atheist, is not persecution. But the right-wing religion industrial complex is convinced that it is.
Mm. Yeah, they're just ridiculous. And, you know, I feel like when I see it, I have to confront it. It's evil, so I have to confront it. And
The only thing necessary for evil to triumph is for good people to do nothing.
You know what? That is true. I didn't even think of it like that, but that is true. I do know that saying. I just kind of, it's just like, no, I'm not going to let you just spill filth all over the place because, you know, I know there are gullible people out there. They'll say, oh, yeah, really? And then they'll, okay, yeah, I guess I believe that. Because they don't, you know, not everybody thinks. Not everybody thinks deeply. They like other people to do their thinking for them. And
well, it's like something that Agnes said to me today. You know, she was in this wreck, and she is still in physical therapy. And the physical therapist has made it quite clear over the course of months that she is deeply a right-winger. You know, a real live teabagger and stuff. And so what Agnes observed to me today is that, you know, she'll sit there and she'll talk about issues, and they'll sit there and they can agree on stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That times are tough for small businesses right now, for instance, like small physical therapy businesses. That our for-profit workers' comp system is making life harder for them and for injured working people than it needs to be. Mm-hmm. Okay, yep, check that box off too, right there.
Yep.
And you can go right down the list, as Agnes has, and then the minute you mention political party,
well, that Obama, he's a communist, socialist, Muslim, anti-colonialist with a deep-seated hatred of white people. I can't vote for him.
And so they will run off and vote for some teabagging horse's ass, because the teabagging horse's ass mouths the right things, even though everything the teabagger wants to do is directly inimical to the position of this small business owner.
Yeah. Oh, they cut off our face to spite their nose. That's what they're doing.
Oh.
That's what they're doing. I mean, you know, and often, if you ever want to have this discussion with someone of these people, you know, virtually, just get into a climate change debate.
Oh, Jesus.
And you can literally destroy them. That's the one beautiful thing that the scientists are really starting, you know, because scientists and liberals are really good at the internets. And there's so much, there's more data than you can even imagine. And it's all really easy to read. And it's all really nice graphs that actually say what.
Yeah, but that's that science.
Yeah, that is that science. But, you know, yeah, like, for example, and of course, you know, once you smash them on, you know, the physics of CO2, which is one of those things that we understand probably out of science, but it's one of the things we really understand. We got a grip on how CO and how carbon and oxygen and how that system works. We understand that. We can demonstrate it. It's rock solid science for that. So that usually just decimates them, but they're impervious. They're impervious to any fact, any reason, any of this. And then, you know, you'll get on to, let's say then you bring up, of course, what happens when carbon dioxide goes into the ocean. We all know what happens with that. Turns it, right, it starts getting acidic. And we've been noticing that, you know, for the past 30 years or since the Industrial Revolution, the ocean has acidified by 30%. So I use that, right? And I say, hey, you know, here's the science, here's the data. 30% is only 0.1 pH. Only 0.1 pH. Only 0.1 pH in your bloodstream, and you're dead. Only 0.1 pH. Yeah, I know, it only seems only little, tiny little bit. Because what we live on, you see, this is the thing, it just drives me nuts. We survive.
Well, point one blood alcohol, and you're, you know, you're talking to fire hydrants. And saying things like, really, Ossifer, I'm not nearly as thick as you drunk I am.
X, Y, W,
P.
You know, I'm falling over. I mean, I mean, come on, guys. What enables this complex organism known as a human being to exist is the microorganisms that just completely cover the planet and exist everywhere on the planet. All the micro life in the ocean, all the micro life in the soil. You know, that's why organic vegetables taste better. Because they come from a living system. It's not just some chemical system. It's a living system. And, yeah, there's chemistry involved, but it's a living, live system. And there's microorganisms.
See, this is, you're tapping right now into why I am so godforsaken angry at these relentless, remorseless, merciless bastards who are blowing up my home. Because see, we're being told now, don't eat the food out of your gardens because it's full of cancer causing toxins.
Well, how'd it get there?
Well, if you ask the mountaintop removers, Jesus put it there.
I think Obama did it.
Well, probably so.
Yep, that's
has nothing to do with those 5 million pounds of high explosives going off every day and putting God knows. And the toxins are, and this is a really fun word, polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons. And they happen when, like diesel fuel doesn't completely burn up when it explodes. And then itsy bitsy micro minuscule, can't see it under a scanning electron microscope particles, land on your dirt and wind up in your belly because you love fresh tomatoes long about mid to late July.
There's that fag talk we were talking about.
Yeah, I know.
That's impossible.
Unscannable.
It can't happen. Yeah. Never. No.
Do you people even watch this program? Yeah, I know.
I don't. You know, it is, and you know, it's not even. They're cutting off our face.
Yeah, and Benedict in the chat room's adding to the 0.01. Yeah, Benedict said 0.02, and I'm saying I love you to women, and that's always trouble.
Yeah, and you know, that's the other thing. You know, you talk about that, the acidification, 0.1 pH. Let's see, even if we stopped it all now, we're still due for another 0.1. We're due to raise it 0.2. And... You know, and
the fish aren't going to like that.
Oh, you know, that's the other thing. You get to, methane's 100 times worse than CO2. Yeah, but you know, and methane is bad, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying, let's dump methane in the atmosphere. But you're over here talking about something we measure in the parts per million, which is CO2, and it's the highest that we've ever seen it, and versus something measured in the parts per billion. And
well, or look at coal ash. The Republicans and a handful of Democrats, my congressman being one of them, are all opposed to the EPA being able to regulate coal ash, and they done put them out a brand spanking new bill to keep the communist EPA from regulating good patriotic American coal ash, because ain't nothing wrong with coal ash, except for the fact that there is the concentrations of arsenic in some drinking water supplies near the coal ash disposal ponds, you know, like the one that broke in East Tennessee a few years back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like 200-300 times higher than the EPA considers safe for things that don't want to get cancer. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then if you heard the Green News report earlier, Albert, you heard that. What the were they teaching at Brigham Young University when Willard Romney was there? They were teaching about what Jesus said when he landed among the Indians. Oh, that's my life.
What Jesus likes on his plane rides to Kolob.
Yeah, right. You know, he likes a little hot compress now and then. Well, him and his brother, the devil, they both like it.
That's right.
But there he is saying, I have to learn more about these job-killing regulations against these poor fishermen. And as Desi Doyen pointed out, you know, the regulations that are trying to actually keep the fishing business alive. Because we've already fished to extinction the massive, massive, massive the cod schools that are near extinction, that were off the northeastern U.S. and off the eastern coast of, you know, Halifax, Nova Scotia, all of that over the, you know, my Canada's not so good. There are stories told by people who have sailed the Pacific, for instance. I'm in this reading stuff about sailing phase right now. Thank you, Tom. There are accounts of, and it's not a joke, of people who would make trans-Pacific passages in like the 1920s and 1930s. and fish would literally, you know, no fishing poles, nothing. Fish would leap onto the boat. Now, there was a voyage about a year or so ago, and it was on a boat that was made entirely out of sustainable, recycled, blah, 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 blah. You know, we do those kind of things now, and it's really cool. And that person had read those accounts, and he said, you know, in the 3,000, 6,000 miles, whatever it was that it took us to cross, we saw one flying fish. One. You know, my father told me stories about being off watch and above decks on the aircraft carrier Essex during the Second World War, and just watching the life, flying fish and stuff, and fish breaching the sea, and dolphins and whales, and he said it was just amazing to behold. A lot of that stuff's gone. I mean, the cod population off the northeast United States, Albert, used to be, I mean, the water was thick with them. You know, a great deal of the early exploration of this continent had to do with the French, the Dutch, and the English wanting to get their hands on that cod, and there was more there than they could fish. And it's gone now. It's goddamn gone.
Tell you what, you know, when zooplankton collapses and we start running out of oxygen, I'm just going to have to stare them in the face. You know, they're going to try their little escapes with drug overdoses, and I'm going to have just Epicac syrup and one of those little backpack spray pump thingies.
Yep. Sorry, you don't get to go. You got to stay and play.
Yep. You know, oh no, you thought it was a good idea. You know, oh, how could we stop fishing? You know, oh, why should we stop dumping? Oh, why should we do this? Why should we have windmills? Why should we have, oh, that's too expensive. It's not ready yet. It's this, it's that, it's da 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 da, and now there's nothing.
And you know, we are notorious, Albert, for movie references around here. Let me throw one at you real quick. You're gonna like this.
Welcome, humans.
Aw, oh, come on. You can do it.
I can't.
Oh, I hate this when it happens. Come on. Aw, oh, who's on the Wi-Fi? Damn it. Let's try this again.
Welcome, humans. I am ready for you.
Oh, almost. Let's try another one and see if it works any better. This just pisses me off.
Fish and plankton and sea greens and protein from the sea. Fish and plankton and sea greens and protein from the sea. Fish and plankton.
Yeah,
and
you remember the guy we're talking about here?
I can't. I have no.
Oh no. Okay.
Bad.
This is the second reference to the movie this evening. Logan's Run. They're trapped in the ice cave.
Yes.
They're trapped in the ice cave with the robot who's there in charge of fish and plankton and sea greens from the sea. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because of course they're all living in and if you that, you know, it's kind of a cheesy movie.
Yeah.
But it's worth the rewatch, because if you think about it, this is the this is the 1% culture that goes into the bubbles.
Yeah. Yeah.
When
a bubble and a half.
Yeah, because and trapped in their bubbles, they create a myth of sanctuary. Sanctuary. You know how it goes.
Yeah, it's sanctuary. It's, you know, infinite, you know, and they'll tell you oil's abiotic, and you know, we're in no danger of running out of it, you know, and they just continue. Oh, there's no way, it's not gonna, 0.1 pH ain't gonna affect no life. And then they'll quote some one blog post, a and meanwhile...
Oh, some goober.
You'll have... I mean, just Google it. You know, Google has documents, Google document. I mean, that's the nice thing about Google, and everybody can say, oh, that, this, that. I'll tell you what, though, in terms of a resource, goodness gracious, the amount of information that you can, I mean, you know, I just look at them. I just say to them, I'm like, you just love being piled underneath scientific papers. I think that's your fetish. You just love getting just annihilated and eviscerated. You didn't eviscerate me. That's because you can't read.
It's because you can't spell eviscerate.
Yeah, you can't spell eviscerate. You don't even know what eviscerate means. You're eviscerated. You're just in a fantasy land. You think you're some kind of holy warrior or something. You think you're Moadib? Is that what you think? Yeah, I know. That's what I think. I think I'm riding on the sandworm. I do. And the reason that your guts are all over your lap in the desk you're sitting is my Chris knife.
Oh, you mean you didn't use the weirding way and just explode him from the inside out with the sound of your voice?
No, because I want to make sure he feels it, and I want his blood to just I want his water to be dry upon the wasteland of his ideology. That's what I want. He needs to be an example, man. I wish I had that weirdness. They're lucky I don't have them kind of power. I mean, I'm glad I don't have those kind of powers because these people drive me to those kind of extremes. It's like, you know, listen.
Well, no, that's like me, Albert. I mean, from time to time, I find myself just saying, Jesus, please, if you love me like you say you do, you will not make a baseball bat materialize in my hands. And that's how I know that Jesus loves me, because he doesn't make the baseball bat materialize in my hands. Because, you know, once Jesus makes the baseball bat materialize in your hands, then you're off into a different movie, and you're Robert De Niro in The Untouchables. You like baseball? I like baseball. It's a team sport, you know?
See? And that's the thing. And that's the real thing, isn't it? Because these are the same people, they don't want to pay any tax. Like they have no mother. They have no country.
These useless turds, Albert. You know, consider the person who brought this suit, one of the people who brought the suit against the Affordable Care Act. It was a woman who said, hell no, you're not going to make me pay for no insurance. Now she was a one percenter, okay?
Of course.
At the time. You know, we'll pay our way because we're marketing. Then she got sick, and then her family went bankrupt. And so there she is, deadbeating her medical bills that the rest of us pay for, and it doesn't matter if you've got insurance or not, you're paying, you know, the rate that I'm going to go pay to have this godforsaken little Republican taken out of my belly includes the losses incurred on account of people like her.
But Obama's assaulting our freedoms.
You know, F them. I mean, F them with a red-hot poker. The fact of the matter is, the administrative agency that oversees Medicare, they have announced that the reforms in the Affordable Care Act have saved senior citizens a total of somewhere around $3.4 billion, with a damn B billion, in prescription drug costs. Over 220,000 beneficiaries have saved an average of $837 apiece in the first 3 months of 2012 alone. Do the math.
Goddamn freeloaders.
Yeah, wanting America to give them something for free?
Yep.
And those idiots standing outside the Supreme Court. If the Supreme Court upholds this godforsaken law, will we comply? Hell no! Will we resist? Hell yes! Are we dumber than the Post? You betcha!
Yeah, I mean, and that's the other thing. It's like, you know, they hate paying taxes. They think it's theft. They think it's theft. They literally...
The government is stealing money from me. The money, and they're taking the money I earned and giving it some welfare queen.
And I can agree with them. that the government does not spend the money wisely.
No, not when you're fronting a stupid war that you can't win and never could in Afghanistan. That's not a wise use of resources.
I mean, and then when you're giving tax cuts, which, I mean, isn't it kind of the pattern that every time the tax rate's low, GDP starts crawling, and then every time the tax rate gets high, GDP starts really picking up?
Well, and that's the thing. These people are ideologically opposed to their own best interests. They got stinking, stupid, filthy rich under the Clinton tax rates. And they did not get as rich under the Bush tax giveaway. They just got a welfare check. And yet they preach to us about how, well, you know what? You know, God damn that Mitt Romney. You know, what you need to do is borrow money from your parents. Well, it turns out one of his sons, Trag or Frag or Dig or Doug or whatever, borrowed a few millions from him and then went and hit his campaign donors up for more to form his own little hedge fund.
Oh, my.
Isn't it sweet?
But, oh, it must be rough. Oh, what a rough life.
And he did that without touching the untaxed $100 million trust fund that's just sitting there waiting for him. Hey, Dad, you got $10 million I can borrow? Sure, son.
You know, they should be...
Why do you look like an Osmond, son? That's what I still can't figure out.
I mean, come on, people. How much money do you fucking need? For real? For serious? Why do you need so much money? You got it already. Just go... God damn it, make us jealous by never working a day in your life and having a beautiful tan and living on the beach because, man, go enjoy your life. I'm never going to... Just stop making so much money. Just stop. And stop sitting there. You know, your money makes money for you, and it only gets taxed 15% or 13%, but my wife works a fair... We work our fingers to the bone. We're getting 35, 38. What the hell is that? Money should be taxed three times as much as labor. Because you're not doing anything. They're not taxing your original investment. And you know what? Even if it is, I mean, goodness gracious, what, a 70%, that's bad? That's terrible? What are you talking about? What's wrong with you? How much? You got $100 million. What can't you do? What can't you do with $100 million?
See, that's the thing. That's where the Mega Millions is right now, and I'm thinking there's not much I can't do.
That's what I mean. Go and live your life. Enjoy. Go make art. Go do whatever you want to go do.
Do nice things for other people who need nice things done for them. Exactly. Albert, got to get out of here, brother.
All right, brother. You take care.
Back to work on those ovens.
I'm getting there, brother.
All right, see ya. Bye now.
All right, bye.
Brother Albert, the sage of Southwest Wisconsin. It is time to get out of here. Thanks for a wonderful Tuesday evening, all of you. Thank you for your kind contributions. Maybe May will turn out a little bit better than, yeah. But thank you. Thank you very much for your kind contributions. Thank you for all the myriad ways in which you participate. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Our op-ed correspondent, Reverbo, is on deep assignment below the possum line and behind the cornbread curtain. Thanks to my head writer, David, in Tennessee. Thanks to John Fox for all he does. Thanks to Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. And thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and StopTheAche.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next on the Horn.
Okay, talk to you.
South America.
Australia. On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A minute past the hour. Welcome to the middle of the week. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn, the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice, headonradionetwork.com, a listener-supported enterprise of some, we're in our eighth year now, ninth if you count the, if you count the exercise in terrestrial broadcasting where this was all born. But anyway, no matter how you slice it, we've been here for a while, and I'm proud of it, as should you be as well, because you are the ones who have kept this going all this time. And, you know, when it's all said and done, or written, or whatever, or carved in stone, let it be noted that Head On with Bob Kincaid went on the air before Air America and has long outlasted it. And it has outlasted Air America on your determination that it do so. Pretty cool, huh? Yeah, the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. If you want to jump in and help, it would certainly be appreciated. We finished April in the hole. We finished March in the hole. I think we finished February in the hole. I can't remember that far back. But the hole's deep, too. So headonradionetwork.com and the PayPal button there. And I'm told by our buddy Randy that it looks like the widget may have stopped working. I don't know if you're out there, John Fox, but the widget is suddenly not keeping up with contributions. And don't know why. So there's that. But no, thank you. Thank you for your contributions that do keep all of this going. It's the only way. Simply put, it is the only way. Because I just don't think we're going to be running across any deep liberal pockets anytime soon. Because I don't run in those circles. And apparently, most progressive broadcasters don't run in those circles, because there's not a lot of funding by the deep pockets folks. It's all a matter of standing with one's hand out, hoping to keep it going. And it is an honor beyond expression that y'all have seen fit to keep this going for as long as you have. A program reminder, program note. I'm kind of doing this every night. Remind me if I forget tomorrow. But no show Friday, no show Monday, no show Tuesday, no show Wednesday. 4 days. And that's because I'm on the road. We're going to be taking the human rights struggle against the Appalachian apocalypse of mountaintop removal. We're going to be taking that on the road to Boston, Massachusetts, and Charlotte, North Carolina. So that's where I'll be. I'll be coming home, I guess. I think I get on a plane like 5, 6 o'clock Wednesday night, and fly thitherward on an old barnstormer, twin-engine nightmare, won't get up over 5,000 feet, you know, just high enough to be dangerous, but not high enough to be comfortable, and return from Charlotte to Charleston Wednesday night. So, no show Friday, no show, well, I mean, there'll be shows. What you will probably hear are reruns of this week. Friday, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and then regular schedule Thursday, regular scheduled program on Friday. I really, I'm looking forward to this opportunity to speak simply because things on the ground are changing so quickly with regard to mountaintop removal, and they are not changing for the better. They are changing for the worse. People here are getting sicker. There is more poison going into the ground, into the water, into the air. And I get a sense that we are approaching a tipping point here. And those of us who have chosen to be in this struggle and refuse to simply walk away and say, do as you will to us, many of us are redoubling our efforts. The AKE campaign, the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Campaign, is on the ground in Washington, D.C., even as I speak. I could have been gone either last week or this week, but health issues precluded that. And so my good friend and colleague, Bo Webb, has soldiered on by himself in large part. He's going to have some help. Vernon Haltom will be going up there, as will Junior Walk. I think they're leaving in the morning, and they'll be doing some work early next week as well. He is working tirelessly to bring awareness of what is going on here in Appalachia to the people who live in the bubble world of Washington, D.C. If you want to learn more about the AKE campaign, the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Campaign, you can just go to Stop the AKE, just like it sounds, STOPTHEACHE, StopTheAKE.org. Okay? Do go and educate yourself and learn a little bit more about it. It is vital work. And it is the work that I believe has the strongest chance of any going on out there at present to end mountaintop removal and begin the slow, long process of healing this tortured, tormented region. Now, of course, it is 7 minutes past the hour. It is the middle of the week. It is Wednesday. Downhill to Friday, as it were. Downhill to Thursday for me because I get on a terrifying airplane on Friday. And so, you know what that means, of course. Yeah. It is, that's right.
Prayer meeting Wednesday on the horn. Hallelujah. Glory, brethren and sistren, put your hands together. Paul, we're going to pass the plate. Hallelujah, glory, amen. We're going to pass the plate. And as we pass the plate, the minister of music will sing our offertory hymn as he does every week. And if you look in the bottom of the plate there, you'll find a PayPal button. Just press that little PayPal button down in the plate as it comes by. No making change in the collection plate. You know, that's just not done. Push the button, pass it on, would you please? Mr. Minister of Music, brother, would you please lead us in our offertory hymn?
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen!
Amen!
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord!
Praise the Lord!
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around! And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah! Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, many a moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Yeah. Whoever said religion should be free?
Oh, what's up, Ralston on the Riller Line, a brawler, brawler, suet, I love you. This is the Cathedral of Common Sense, brethren and sistren, hallelujah, glory. Welcome. Quit fooling around out there in the parking lot with the deacons, smoking with the sinners. Come on in through the vestibule. Come on in, eschewing that 20-year-old bowl of nasty dried-up buttermint sitting there that nobody's touched since... since Sister Eunice, before she went on to her long home and her great reward, placed them there sometime during the Kennedy administration. Come on down that blood-red carpet, brethren and sistren, and fall on your knees before the altar and lay your hands on the subwoofer. This is the Cathedral of Common Sense, brethren and sistren. Hallelujah, glory. And I am... ultimate imam, uber rabbi, superior pope, animist, badass bishop, Bob Kincaid, and we are here for a midweek evening. Hallelujah. Amen and amen. We are here for an evening of praise and worship and wonderment. Glory. Oh, I can feel the Spirit a-washing over me. Washing over me, amen and amen. You know, last night on one of those regular sinner nights here on the program, not prayer meeting Wednesday, but we talked a little bit about Matt Barber. Matt Barber is with Liberty Counsel's Faith and Freedom Radio. They got everything you'd need to make a radio show. They got little old blue-haired ladies sending in their Social Security checks, all kinds of stuff. Yes, they do. And what do they do with it, brethren and sistren? I'll tell you what they do. They pour poison into people's ears. Here's a classic example from Matt Barber. What was he going on about last night, brethren and sistren? I can't remember. It's been so far. It's so long ago. But we need to understand, and it was first pointed out many years ago here on the Horn by folks like Peter Godbold and folks like our dear friend Kate on the Front Range, the monumental power that gay folks have. To change the very structures of the planet. Earthquakes, floods, plagues, hurricanes, frogs, locusts, rivers of blood. Gay people can cause them all. And now we find out that it's gotten all the way down into our social fabric.
But this tyranny of rights, this tyranny of the minority, and we're not talking racial minorities, neutral minorities, we're talking about people who define their identity based upon sexually deviant behaviors and proclivities. So this is a tyranny of sexually deviant rights, and it's by design to displace the enumerated constitutional rights, given by our Creator, based upon the laws of nature and nature's God. These so-called rights violate the laws of nature and nature's God, and yes, violate the express guarantees that we have to religious liberty, freedom of speech, freedom of association granted to us by the United States Constitution.
You heard all that? It violates the laws of nature and nature's God. Now, this is a little bit like romper room here. You know, because I can see everybody who holds their hands up out there. Yeah, I can. You know, me and the doobie. Everybody who knows where that line, the laws of nature and nature and nature's God, that's the phrase, nature and nature's God. Everybody who knows where that phrase comes from, raise your hand, please. Yeah, uh-huh. Oh, yes, I do. I see Timmy.
And Cindy's got her hand up, and Susie's got her hand up. And there's John, and he's got his hand up. David's got his hand up. Oh, mercy, we've got hands up all over the room. Everybody knows, right? Everybody knows that nature and nature's God, that phrase comes from the Declaration of Independence. Everybody knows that. And everybody knows that the Declaration of Independence is not law. That is a... And I know, this will bother the little right-wingers, but very bright. The Declaration of Independence is not the law of the United States, because the Declaration was written sometime over the course of June 1776, and it was formally and officially published on July the 4th, and probably not seen by many people until July the 5th, 1776. It was a propaganda document. It was a list of grievances. It was something akin to the same sort of thing. It has a history, because it's rather akin to Martin Luther nailing his theses. I said theses. Dadgummit. I said theses, nailing his theses to the church door, his objections to the excesses and abuses of the church. Well, the Declaration of Independence is very much the same sort of thing. It is a declaration of objections to the abuses that the colonists then perceived that King George III had engaged in against them. Right? So we understand, although either he does and is willfully lying to his audience, which we can't rule that out, because this is, after all, right-wing radio we're talking about, and they lie to their audiences on a routine and regular basis. We can't rule out that he knows better and is lying, but we also are in a bit of a spot, because we cannot rule out the fact that since this guy is a fundamentalist who believes that the world is actually younger than the written recipe for beer and bread, that this guy is just dumber in the head than a hog is in the ass. He is, after all, a fundamentalist Christian, not known for their brightness. So you got to sort it out for yourself. I'm not going to do it for you. You got to sort it out for yourself which one it is. But either way you slice it, either way you slice it, the guy is just wrong. Now, it's been so long since I ran it, let's go back and understand why.
Place the enumerated constitutional rights given by our Creator based upon the laws of nature and nature's God.
There it is. Our constitutional rights given by our Creator based upon nature and nature's God. Now, we understand that nature and nature's God is a phrase from the Declaration of Independence, but let's check. Let's check here, and with the official copy from archives.gov, the official copy of the Constitution of the United States. Because we're looking here for nature and nature's God. Let's see, the preamble. And you got to figure it would be in the preamble. Let's see, it starts out in Congress. We the people of the United States. Okay, no nature, no nature's God there. In order to form more perfect union, there's another clause. No God, no nature, no nature's God. Establish justice. No God there. Ensure domestic tranquility. No invocation of a deity in that. Provide for the common defense. Promote the general welfare. No, it's not there either. And secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Well, if you're ever going to stick nature and nature's God somewhere, that'd be the very place to do it. But it's not there either. Do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. Now, I have to tell you that I have been reading for about 44 years, so I like to think I'm pretty good at it. No, 47 years. Okay, let's be generous, 46. But I've been reading for a long time. And I can generally spot, and I can tell the difference between G-O-D and D-O-G even. Right? And everything I just read to you was the exact preamble to the Constitution of the United States. Now, if we want to, we can go through the rest of the body of the document, but will you trust me when I tell you that it's not there either? Because when you get into the body of the document, you really get into the business end of stuff of, I mean, this is a framework for a government. It is not a, it's not a declaration of grievances or beliefs or any of that sort of stuff. And yet, just the same, talking to his none-too-bright audience, here again is Matt Barber creating an elision, I suppose, would be the appropriate term, an elision between the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence.
Rights given by our Creator, based upon the laws of nature and nature's God, these so-called rights violate the laws of nature and nature's God, and yes, violate the express guarantees that we have to religious liberty, freedom of speech, freedom of association granted to us by the United States Constitution.
It really does take a special kind of weird little mind to be able to do the mental gymnastics that he just did. Because on the one hand, he's talking about the God granted the rights, and the next thing you know, he's talking about the rights guaranteed under the Constitution of the United States. Well, you know, pick one, Matt. But you can't have both. Because, see, he opens the... Well, how then does he feel about, if these rights come from God, how does he feel about old, little Jimmy Madison? You know, little James Madison was about 5 foot nothing, but he had a big old brain. And he is both mother and father of the Constitution and midwife to it as well, I suppose you could say. Because but for James Madison, there would be no Constitution. And James Madison was very, very clear. Don't trust me. Ask Dr. Bill. He'll be starting his own show here in a couple of months, a couple of hours a day, talking about the origins of the Constitution, bringing on experts, that kind of thing. And it is abundantly clear, and it was made clear, for instance, in this past PRISM West Virginia American History Chat Series installment this past Saturday. James Madison did not want a Bill of Rights. He did not think it necessary. All that business about freedom of religion and expression and the press and the freedom to keep and arm bears and jury trials and right to confront your accuser and all the stuff that's contained in what we call the Bill of Rights, James Madison thought to be entirely superfluous. And you can read all about it in the Federalist Papers. Maybe that's the problem here. Mr. Matt Barber is not a big one for that reading thing. Maybe he hasn't been reading for 46 years. Maybe he hasn't been reading for 30. He just tells him what the spirit of Jebus tells him to say into the microphone. So he's clearly willing to lie. Not surprising, he is a fundamentalist Christian.
The LGBT agenda and constitutional rights cannot exist in harmony, and at Liberty Council, we defend the Constitution.
Yeah, thanks to the folks at rightwingwatch.org for that clip. It must be a living hell over there. I don't know how they do it every day, just watching all of this right-wing fascistic filth. But there you have it. Not only does the LGBT community cause earthquakes and floods and tornadoes and volcanoes and no, they also cause the Constitution to cease to exist. That's right. A gay person who would like to be able to avail him or herself of the full range of protections that are in fact guaranteed by the amendments to the Constitution, you know, beyond the Bill of Rights, the 13th Amendment, the 14th Amendment, that kind of stuff. Well, you know, they just need to forget about it and shut up and be second-class citizens and be glad that they're second-class and not third, because, you know, we can always fire up the ovens, right? Because, after all, what did he say? Yeah, it's a deviant behavior and proclivity. That gay folks wanting to be able to get married and have the same rights that straight folks have in the United States. Let's see, what is that? That's a tyranny of sexually deviant rights. And it means to replace the enumerated constitutional rights. So, no free speech if there's gay marriage. The right to keep and arm bears, goodbye. Oh, but wait, these goobers are talking about freedom of religion, which they clearly have in abundance, because they're sitting there in very well-funded fashion spewing hate and filth all over the interweb tubes. And then there's that little thing he says at the very beginning where he references, these gay people, they're not a minority, you know, like black people. They're not a neutral minority. Yeah, that one grabbed me too, and it got hold of Sandra as well. Neutral minority? What the hell is that? Is he talking about Adams? What a fucking dumbass. And in a word, he is. But again, you come back around to that philosophical discussion of whether or not he's deliberately being a dumbass, or whether he's being a dumbass for the benefit of shifting the views of people who don't know better. And I've got another example of that. I don't know if you're aware of it, but another right-wing liar, and I mean, this guy has gone pro, okay? Another right-wing liar went on Jon Stewart's The Daily Show. He was on there, I guess, Tuesday night. Pimping some book of garbage that he's written called The Jefferson Lies, claiming that, all them secularist atheists are out there claiming Jefferson wasn't saved. Well, there's a moment in there that is pure, unmitigated brilliance. And I think it will be worthwhile to replay it, because it's an even more broadly brushed example of the way these followers of the Prince of Peace are willing to lie and distort and twist. I have an email here from our good friend Michael, Kid A, from the chat room. He says, did I tell you I picked up a copy of the Jefferson Bible Monday night? You know, his abridged version, removing all the miracles and the virgin birth, you know, all the hooey. It was in the atheism section. I'm not sure yet if that is the most correct place for it, but it made me smile and want to give the independent bookstore my money. Good for you, Michael. Good for you. That's a good thing. And Jefferson really did it. He compiled a Bible that got a New Testament, at least, that got rid of all of the baloney. You know, dead people getting up, and lepers suddenly finding themselves unleprous, and loaves and fishes that didn't bioduplicate, and basically paired Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer, down to his essence. And you know, when you do that, you come up with a very, very fascinating person. Albeit a very fascinating human being, but a very, very fascinating one. Yet he was radically different. And radical like him get done to the zombies because they're suggesting their way of living that challenges the status quo. But that sounds kind of preachy, so we'll take a pass on it. But Matt, Matt Barber has as is the case with so many of these twisted right wingers, has a weird fascination with what goes on with other people when the light goes off. And I just tell you, if you go and you watch the video, and other people have far better gaydar than I do, but Matt doesn't exactly present a stirring and inspiring portrait of heterosexuality. You know, you can just kind of see Matt in his trench coat with a hat pulled low over his eyes and the collar of his trench coat turned up against a wind that isn't there as he pops in to the nearest gay bar establishment looking for a little companionship on a Saturday night. Because, you know, they do that kind of thing. You can see it all over at rightwingwatch.org. Rightwingwatch.org. By the way, he has also in the past said that the LGBT community is trying to turn America communist and that they want to put conservatives in prison. No soap on a rope for you, Bubba. And so LGBT rights are inconsistent, according to Mr. Matt Barber, with the Constitution of the United States of America. Even though the Constitution of the United States is sex neutral, it's not necessarily gender neutral, because it's hard for a document to be gender neutral when it assumes that the one of the two genders that make up the human condition is not as equal as the other. Of course, then there's also that whole three-fifths thing out there as well. But they were a neutral minority. Those people that were three-fifths of a human being, right? Yeah, right. But there is, since it is Wednesday, it's worth taking a look at the fact that they are. I mean, here they are. They've got a lovely message to study. They've got a lovely life around which to build their own existence, one that says, love your neighbor as yourself, one that says, love your enemies, one that says that that loving your neighbor is literally the second most important thing in the world behind loving God. See, they wouldn't, and Jesus had to put it that way, because if he had just said, love your neighbor as yourself was number one, they wouldn't even wasted time taking it. They would have just stomped him to death right there where he was if he didn't say, love God came first. What's that phrase that Tennessee legislator used? They would have stomped a mud hole in him. But of course, it's not just Matt Closet that has a fascination with gay people and what he perceives. What rights do they want? What kind of rights? Do they want the right to be all gay out in the streets? Well, no more than heterosexuals do, but I think they do. But it's not just him. There's also John MacArthur, the pastor of Grace Community Church in Sun Valley, California. And John MacArthur, pastor of Grace Community Church in Sun Valley, California, says that God, you know, invisible, omniscient, unprovable, probably not there, God has abandoned America. Goodbye now. See you later. Enjoy the frogs and locusts and rivers of blood. I'm out of here. No, this is... more fascination. More untoward, inexplicable, except by means of resort to questions of hopeless latency, inexplicable fascination with how a certain segment of the population loves each other.
The first thing that happens in a nation when it is abandoned by God is a sexual revolution. Moral, sexual, perversion, pornographic desire describes the general character of the culture. When a society is abandoned by God, it operates out of its own perverse sexual passion without restraint. So the first thing that you look for in a society, if you're trying to discern whether God has abandoned that society, is whether or not that society has gone through a sexual revolution so that illicit sex, adultery, every form of immorality is accepted as normal in that society. God gave them over not just to passions that are explicable because they're men and women, but to inexplicable, degrading passions, for their women exchange the natural function for that which is unnatural. You know a society has been abandoned by God when it celebrates lesbian sex.
They can't resist. I mean, they are absolutely plumb eat up thinking about lesbian sex. And you know, I think, okay, here's how I think it breaks out. And I will gladly accept elaboration or correction from people who know better. The fascination with lesbian sex comes from the straight male portion of the fundamentalist community. Yeah, baby. Yeah, I want to watch. Right? On the other hand, the fascination with male-on-male sex comes from the deeply closeted right wing. The gay right-wing men who are restricted by their lives, their wives, their jobs, the philosophies of the people with whom they work and who pay them very well. They are not allowed to be themselves. So what Pastor MacArthur, Pastor John MacArthur of Grace Community Church, doesn't sound very graceful, does he? Doesn't sound like there's just a whole lot of grace going on out there. I guess he's forgotten the name or something. If people are able to express themselves and their love, their respect, their passion and compassion in the means to do so in which these people's God made them, then that is a sign that God has abandoned the people who aren't the way. Wait a minute, I'm getting lost. So God has abandoned the straight people, but does that mean God likes gay people better? Just asking. But once again, absolutely fascinated. You know, did you hear the delivery still? You know, a society has been abandoned by God when it celebrates lesbian sex. You know, I was just downtown today. I had to go down and put some gas in the vehicle because I'm going to be going down the mountain tomorrow for a doctor's appointment for one of the kids. And after that, I got to go down the mountain on Friday to get on an airplane. It takes a lot of gasoline to do that kind of thing. And, you know, I went downtown, and right in the middle of the street, there was a big old celebration of lesbian sex going on. There's marching bands, and the mounted unit of the West Virginia State Police was there on their horses and their helmets and stuff, and they was just walking down the middle of the street celebrating that lesbian sex. And there were some lesbians right in the front, and they was kissing on one another and holding hands and throwing flowers to the crowd. I tell you, and you know what? You know what's amazing? We have one of those celebrations of lesbian sex about every 2 hours downtown in the little town where I live. Oh, for heaven's sakes. It's it really is. It's just too much. The degree of hate that suffuses these people. Of course, you hate in others what you most recognize in yourself if you are a mentally unwell person. And that probably makes a lot of sense in this case. If these fundies could actually let themselves loose from their hung up, tied down, strapped down, weirded out, strict... If they could be themselves, can you imagine what they would be? There would be celebrations of lesbian sex down small-town American streets, and I'm not sure that would be a bad thing. I think if people could be who they were meant to be in this country, we would be a far more normal and happy place. Understanding, of course, as Peter Godbold noted, that normal is only a setting on a dryer. It is prayer meeting Wednesday, however, and... Do you know the story of Richard Grinnell? Now, I am no fan of the Willard Romney campaign. I find Willard to be really weird. And the Mormon Church is no friend to the LGBT community. They poured millions of dollars that could have been used to feed the hungry, clothe the naked, house the homeless, etc., into their Proposition Hate campaign in California. But to some small degree of credit, Willard Romney had, as a member of his staff, an openly gay man. And you heard Matt Barber blithering on about the tyranny of the minority. Well, they're upset about what they're upset that that beaten up minorities have any rights at all, because their goal is the tyranny of the majority. There's more of us than there are of you, so you need to sit down and shut up. And so the right wing, of whom Willard Romney is terrified, because they're out there talking more about Mitt Romney's bizarre religion than any of us are, you know, Planet Kolob and all of that stuff. The right wing went to war with the Willard Romney campaign over nothing more than one of his campaign aides. I offer you Brian Fisher of the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mazupistan.
So this is huge, ladies and gentlemen. This is absolutely huge that a homosexual...
I think he's drinking before he gets behind the microphone. I mean, just saying. Did you hear that? Ladies and gentlemen, catch me if I'm wrong.
So this is huge, ladies and gentlemen. This is absolutely huge that...
Ladies and gentlemen, I'll be here all week. Don't forget to sip your waitress. This is... Huge, ladies and gentlemen.
This guy's slurring more than Limbaugh.
So this is huge, ladies and gentlemen. This is absolutely huge that a homosexual activist in a very prominent place in Mitt Romney's campaign has stepped down. He has resigned, and it's very clear from the Washington Post that he resigned because of pressure that was put on the Romney campaign by the pro-family community. So, ladies and gentlemen, this is...
By the pro-family community. You know, by the bigot community. They've got to have a pretty name for... They're pro-family, you know, because no gay person ever came from a family. Gay people just sit around there stirring their little cauldrons and invoking demons against families because, you know, gay people are hatched. They don't really have mothers and fathers and families that love them, right?
It's a huge win, and it's a huge win for us in regard...
Yeah, it's a huge win for them that they put enough bigoted pressure on the Willard Romney campaign that this man, who actually wanted Willard Romney to win the presidency, stepped down for the good of the campaign so that the bigots would be happy.
Hard to Mitt Romney, because Mitt Romney has been forced to say, look, I overstepped my bounds here. I went outside the parameters here. I went off the reservation with this hire, pro-family.
Off the reservation? Really? Really, Brian Fisher? Off the reservation? Why don't you just go ahead and say left the plantation while you're at it, buddy? Dumbass Mississippi stand freak. Off the reservation. You gonna call? Are you gonna refer to Mr. Grinnell as chief too, buddy? These guys are bigots without even trying. He's celebrating bigotry against a gay man, and he works in a little Native American slur while he's at it.
The community has called me back to the table here, called me back inside the borders of the reservation. Now, Mitt Romney's not...
Twice!
I'm not going to admit that. I guarantee you he's not going to admit. But, that's exactly what happened. This is a huge win for the pro-family community. And what this means now... And here's what...
Well, enjoy it, because it's the biggest win you're going to have in the pro-family community between now and November, buddy. And probably not November either. Because you're not going to get those... Brian Fisher is not going to get those same people that he's screaming to. This is yours, gentlemen. Slurring at. He's not going to get those people to believe that they can trust a president who thinks he's going to get his own planet when he dies... And whose savior came from planet Kolob with his little brother Satan. You say it.
Why it's important that we took Romney on this deal. This is why it's important that we did this. You know, Tony Perkins came out and agreed
Norman.
With me this was problematic. Gary Bauer came out and agreed with me this was a problematic hire.
Wait. It's Wednesday. I can feel the shafts of glowing light pouring through the south-facing window panes of our studio here. You can almost hear the choir of angels. Ah! Because the God of irony has just given us a sign. The God of irony is with us. All hail the God of irony. Why? Let's go back.
Here's why it's important that we took Romney on this deal. This is why it's important that we did this. You know, Tony Perkins came out and agreed with me this was problematic. Gary Bauer came out and agreed.
Tony Perkins came out. Gary Bauer came out. And they went to that celebration of lesbianism, you know, just down the street with the horses and the brass band and the elephants and the majorettes and the cheerleaders and stuff. Thank you, Irony God. Thank you.
This was a problematic hire. You know, we were virtually lone voices in the wilderness, but evidently the energy was building. And here's what's important. This is why it was important that I take Governor Romney on, that we as the pro-family community take Governor Romney on, is I will flat out...
Yeah, because see those five kids that look like Osmonds of Willard Romney's? That's not really his family. They come from Renton Osmond. But really, I mean, you just go to Utah. They're in every grocery store. You can rent five Osmonds, give them a $100 million trust fund. They're not really your family.
Guarantee you he is not going to make this mistake again. There is no way in the world that Mitt Romney isn't going to put a homosexual activist in any position of importance in his campaign.
Shh! Don't tell Brian Fisher, but he probably missed a couple of lesbians along the way. I mean, you reckon? I mean, it's a pretty huge organization at this point in time. I mean, what are they doing? Are they doing psychological testing with electrodes hooked up to genitals and showing movies to make sure that nobody's really, really gay? Brian, I hate to send you back onto the reservation, buddy, but, well, I think there's probably still some gay people in the Romney campaign. Shh. Yeah, thanks to our buddies at Right Wing Watch. I love these guys. I just do. And one last thing. I mentioned David Barton. David Barton is from a nasty little organization called Wall Builders. He founded Wall Builders. And Wall Builders is an organization that just makes up quotes from famous dead Americans who are no longer able to defend themselves. David Barton has a new book out in which he argues, I guess, that Thomas Jefferson was a fundamentalist Christian who believed that the earth was just slightly younger than the written recipe for bread and beer. And so, kind of a shame on you to Jon Stewart for even having this freak on his show, because he just gave him a platform. And even if one of Stewart's audience goes, well, you know, he might be right, and falls into the satanic lies that David Barton spews, then Jon Stewart has done more harm than Jon Stewart knows. Jesus Christ, there are thousands of hours of right-wing broadcasting for every hour that anybody normal has. And Jon Stewart just took some of his time and gave it to the liars. So there he is, talking with David Barton. And I guess there is some benefit to this, because we get to find out that David Barton is, in fact, a liar, but it didn't come out on Stewart's program. No, the way it was presented, even though Stewart said, what? Even though he said that, still, it wasn't contradicted. So another one of the lies for which David Barton is famous, but not among the people that matter, not among the people to whom he is lying. Well, you know, a lie gets around the world before the truth gets its shoes on. And it's never been more true than in this case. So let's pick up in the conversation and just see where we are.
To think that, you know, Christians in the Christian community feel under attack right now. They feel like they're having a rough run of it. Would that be a fair statement?
I would say that they feel that way. I would say national polling goes that way.
Right.
And I would say that what I deal with is Christians arrested for
Christians are being arrested for simply being Christians. Yeah, that's where he's going. And do you hear the gooey accent? So, you know, this is the philosophical great-grandson of those same ministers of the gospel who stood in the pulpit in 1855, 1860, 1862, and said, God ordained the institution of slavery. Jesus died on the cross to preserve slavery because the white man is so superior to those sons of Nod. Or some such shit as that. I've got a relative who talked that crap. If there is an afterlife, I'm going to stand at the gates of hell and tease him with ice water off for all eternity. Ooh, you'd like me to just flick some on you, wouldn't you? Yeah, Sam, you'd like me to just flick some on you, wouldn't you? Ooh, tell me about how Jesus loves slavery some more. Got an ice cube right here, Sam Black.
They're doing what I would call free speech.
Right. Now, where are they arrested?
Well, for example, Pastor Mark Hall in Kansas got arrested for standing on a sidewalk and giving out gospel John to anybody who would take it. We had two Gideons arrested in Florida for giving out Bibles for anybody to take it.
Right.
At a 67-year-old
Now, what was the arrest
the charge?
For? Yeah.
They didn't have a parade permit.
What, was it a parade?
No. Two guys on the sidewalk?
But it is, I guess, because coming up from it from a non Christian or religious perspective.
Of course, you need to understand that everything David Barton has just said is a complete lie. But here comes the real Lulu.
Christianity seems pretty safe in this country and pretty ubiquitous.
In some ways it is.
Overwhelming.
I mean, you got 83% of the nation that says it's Christian, but when you go to public policy stuff, I mean, we had a kid in St. Louis praying over, five-year-old kid praying over his own lunch. Teacher picked him up physically out of the chair and yelled at him, "You won't pray over your lunch."
Right.
That's
but
the
that,
kind of
that, you got that? You got that? I mean, let's get this nailed down real good. A five-year-old little boy is in kindergarten, probably, in St. Louis, and he's just minding his own business, praying over his lunch. I don't know if he was trying to resurrect his lunch from the dead, or if he was trying to heal his lunch, or if he was trying to turn, you know, sardines into peanut butter and jelly, or we don't know what this five-year-old's intent was when he was just praying over his lunch. But he was just praying over his lunch, right? Minding his own business.
I would think that that...
Now, what happened? I'm sorry, we got to go back here. What happened?
...that says it's Christian, but when you go to public policy stuff, I mean, we had a kid in St. Louis praying over... Five-year-old kid praying over his own lunch. Teacher picked him up physically out of the chair, yelled at him, "You won't pray over your lunch."
Right.
Wow. Picked him up physically out of the chair. And yelled at him, "You will not pray over your lunch!" Man, this is a brutal Christian persecuting nation we're in, isn't it?
That's
but
the kind
that,
I felt it.
I would think that that teacher would get in a lot of trouble.
No. Actually, that's why
a
we...
A teacher picked a five-year-old up by the scruff of their neck,
no,
turned him like this and went, "You will not pray over your lunch," plopped him back down,
no,
and the kid got
took
in trouble.
To the principal, and the principal did the same thing the teacher did.
But
curiously enough, the principal's last name was Pilate. Say.
They're idiots then.
Exactly.
Those people are...
But where did they get that? Where did they get that sense? And where do we find... I mean, we just had a hearing in Senate on this, went through 67 single-spaced pages of all of these...
You ever notice that they're fascinated with page amounts and single-spacing versus double-spacing? So, you know, there he is perpetuating the Fat Tony Scalia meme. "You don't expect us to read all these pages with all these words on it, do you? That's a lot of words. 67 single-spaced pages, my God!"
Singular incidents like this, there's a hostility... And the hostility is being fueled by people who say this is what Jefferson wanted. This is what he was all about.
That's the connection?
That's the connection.
On the flip side of it.
Yeah, okay. So, you know the story, right? The student was named Raymond Raines. Okay? And, Raymond Raines, this is an old story. The story goes back pre-2009. That's what this liar David Barton does. It just happened day before yesterday. Makes it sound like it, doesn't it? More than 3 years ago. To give you a little hint, Ann Coulter was among the first to write about it. Flush Flimball, the oxymoron's brother David, was among the first to write about it. Or fictionalize about it. And, see, Raymond Raines wasn't five. Raymond Raines was 10. Lie number one. Now, yeah, you heard the audio just like I did, right? He didn't say, I think the kid was five, maybe six. I don't know. I could be mistaken. No, he said the child was 5 years old, and the teacher picked him bodily up out of his chair and said, "You will not pray over your food." It's just crazy, isn't it? His mama said he was given detention. His mama said. You know, baby is always right in the eyes of mama. Mama said he was put in detention because he was praying over his lunch. But there was a problem. Lawyers from the Rutherford Institute, who are out there to protect our religious liberties, our freedom of expression, you know, as long as they're the right kind of expression, right?
Well, they jumped in. Boy, they were going to defend little Raymond Raines because he got yanked up and shaken and he's out of his chair and was told not to pray over his lunch. There's only one problem. It didn't happen. And by that, I don't mean it didn't happen like they said. I mean it didn't happen. You know, kind of the way there were dinosaurs on Earth, and that did happen, but no human beings, especially not Adam and Eve, never rode a dinosaur to church on Sundays. That never happened. This is that kind of never happened. Kenneth Brostrin was the lawyer for the school system. He said, I can tell you he was not reprimanded for praying. You think it makes sense that the teachers would look around the cafeteria and target the one student who was praying quietly at his seat? No. You know what Raymond Raines was doing? Raymond Raines was brawling. He was fighting. And he was sent to the principal's office for fighting. But you see, these Christians are a bunch of godforsaken, filthy liars. So because they've got to fuel this equally filthy lie that they're being persecuted, well, they have to completely fabricate a story. Completely make up a story. Because they don't have any stories of spikes being rammed up the fundaments of Christians who were then rolled in pitch and lit on fire outside of Nero's apartments or in the Vatican field before there was ever a Vatican. It's not happening. But Raymond Raines was 5 years old, not 10, and he wasn't fighting, he was praying. Broad is the way. Broad is the way. And they are liars. And if anyone wants to destroy, if anyone wants a country that is incompatible with the rights supposedly enshrined in the Constitution, and that's another story altogether, as Jim noted in a previous email, he says, I've been reading a lot as well. George III and Parliament actually wanted the colonies to help pay for expenses of the French and Indian War. They were happy to have the redcoats when needed, but did not wish to help out paying for it. Many of the taxes found so onerous by the colonists were passed as early as 1733, but not enforced. Jim notes the rest is history, as you know quite well. And that's true. Everything Jim says there is absolutely true. Our glorious revolutionary past is not quite as it would seem. If you've been following the PRISM West Virginia American History Chat series, you know that much of what has been passed down to us as history is actually hagiography. The Constitution of the United States was enshrined, passed, what have you, as a means of protecting the monetary and property rights of the 1%. It just was. That's not a criticism. That's not a damnation, a condemnation. It is just an observation of fact. And James Madison, who apparently was the devil, if you listen to these right-wingers, Bill of Rights? Who needs one? He turns out to have been wrong, not right. But this is the nature, this is the lying nature of a great deal of what passes for Christianity in this country. Not all of them. There are very, very good people. I know some of them. I respect some of them greatly. And
and I even work with them. And when you talk to them, you can tell that they have actually spent a considerable amount of time studying the life. Not so much the gory death, but the life and the transformative ideas of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer who was an itinerant rabbi. You can tell that love thy neighbor goes all the way to their core. You can tell that messages about feeding the hungry, clothing the naked, housing the homeless, visiting the sick and imprisoned, that goes all the way down to their toenails. But no one out there is actively speaking up and saying that Brian Fisher is not a follower of Christ. Christianity has a Christianity problem.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to evade. It's kind of hard to evade, isn't it, Clayton? Nero was right. I understand why you write that. Kevin writing in says, Bob, these nonsensical rabbit trails the right wing continues to talk about are only a cover to distract us from the real issues of the economy, continued loss of freedoms, ignorance of the Constitution, and ignorance can be used in several different ways here. Ignorance can be willful or by just not knowing. But in the case of these so-called leaders of the right-wing Christian community, they want to make us a theocracy and to just willfully ignore all the parts of the Constitution that they don't agree with, especially the part that says equal rights for all people. Very sad that the sheeple of the Christian community continue to follow these so-called leaders without questioning their motives and the rightness or wrongness of what these morons are preaching in the first place. Indeed, Kevin. Kevin also noting that if the kid was praying at all, he was probably praying that the pink slime he was about to eat would be changed into real meat. Oh, today's special, says Kevin, rent 4 Osmonds, get the 5th Osmond free. Yeah. So there we are, this evening's prayer.